I think just in terms of the attendance currently, we have Honorable Mthethwa, Honorable Nkosi, Honorable Nicolakis, Honorable Zananala, Honorable Selekhu, Honorable Masamai, Honorable Bartlett. On the platform, I think we've not received any apologies from any honorable member except Honorable Nicolakis, who might not be with us between 10 and 11. But welcome, honorable members, to this meeting. We will be receiving a briefing by the Department of Home Affairs and the Border Management Authority on the APP and budget. Let me welcome the Honorable Minister, Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi. I see we have the Commissioner of the DMA. I'm not sure if Deputy Commissioner is on the platform as well, but welcome. The head of department, as well as all other officials that are on this platform, welcome to this meeting. We've also received an apology from the executive, from the deputy minister. Honourable members, as has been the practice, we have been engaging portfolios within our committee in terms of their budget and APP, and we have also requested additional information from the Department of Home Affairs, other strategic information, more for the benefit of select committee members, and also in areas that we have been engaging the department on. We requested the Department of Home Affairs also to provide us with we requested the department also to provide us with a breakdown, in addition to the breakdown of the 2022-23 budget allocations to provinces, including resourcing of provincial offices, training, recruitment and filling of key vacancies, the impact of COVID-19 on service delivery provincially, and upcoming legislation for 2022-23. As well as the Home Affairs litigation budget in respect of civil claims against Home Affairs and court action brought by Home Affairs members challenging dismissal or disciplinary action or charges, and as well as an overview of the budget and timeframes for the implementation of the Border Management Authority in line with the Act 2 of 2020. As well as any significant achievements or challenges in the implementation of the Border Management Authority. That being said, honourable members, let me then hand over to the Minister of Home Affairs to take us through the presentation. Minister, we received both the presentation from the department as well as the one on the Border Management Authority. We request that we be taken through both presentations, and thereafter, honourable members will then engage the department. Minister, if I can hand over to yourself.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me greet the honourable members of the Select Committee. Perhaps, Chairperson, I must start giving this opportunity to the DG of the department to introduce to you the team that he has brought from the Department of Home Affairs, thereafter from the Commissioner of the Border Management Authority, Dr. Masia Pato, to also introduce his team. Then from there, I'll make some opening remarks and some comments. Then I'll give over, because I can see in terms of the program here, we start with the BMA. I'll give over to Commissioner Masia Pato to take you through the performance, and then from there, the DG of Home Affairs. Thank you very much. DG, can you start by introducing our team, please?
Good morning, and thank you so much, Minister. Good morning, Chairperson. From the Department of Home Affairs, Minister and Chairperson, we joined by DDG Thomas Sigama, responsible for civics, acting DDG for Immigration Services, Mr. Yusuf Simons, DDG responsible for Institutional Planning and Support, Mr. Tulani Mafuso, DDG responsible for Counter-Corruption and Security Services, Advocate Constance Moise. We have received an apology, Minister, from the CFO who's attending to another departmental matter. And then from the Ministry, we joined by Mr. Mudubi, Maisela Kamduli, Chief of Staff, and then Sia Koza from Ministry as well, the Minister spokesperson, Mr. Muzi Joko, and then Madiete Makua. Mudiri Matthews is acting as Chief Director responsible for Intergovernmental Relations. And then the last one from HR is acting DDG Matt Ambane Sifanyetso Molife, also joining us, Minister. I'll then hand back to the Minister for the BMA to do its introductions. Thank you so much.
And good morning, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members, as well as the Minister. From the Border Management Authority, Honorable Members, it is myself, Mike Masiapato, as the Commissioner for Border Management Authority. Unfortunately, we don't have the Deputy Commissioners as we speak. They are hard at work in making sure that we get indeed BMA operationalized. So on that basis, they are busy with other official work, as it were. That is the Deputy Commissioner for Operations, General Chilembe, as well as the Deputy Commissioner Tupana for Corporate Services. They are busy with issues on the capacitation of the Border Management Authority. But on the call, I am also joined by the manager in the Project Management Office, Mr. Jim Ravel. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Thank you. Minister, if you could just bear with me as well. Perhaps in terms of the presentation, can we start with the Home Affairs one? The Border Management Authority will actually flow also from your presentation. Thank you.
No problem. No problem. Chairperson will definitely do that. Chairperson, I said I'll start with a few remarks. First of all, I'm sure this is the first time we're having a meeting with you since the Deputy Director General responsible for immigration retired. I'm sure you heard somebody being introduced as the acting DDG for immigration. We used to have Mr. McKay, who retired at the end of April. We now got UC Simons, who used to be the head of Home Affairs in the Western Cape, to act as an acting DDG for immigration. He is on the platform. I'm sure you also heard about an acting DDG for HR. It is because in HR, Chairperson, we have suspended three, the most senior people in HR, the DDG, the chief director, and the director, they are on suspension and being charged. So we have got an 18% in that capacity. Having said so, Chairperson, I want to make a few remarks, especially about the things you want to hear about. The biggest one being number 2C, the recruitment and filling of key vacancies. Yeah, Chairperson, we have got a big problem about vacancies in Home Affairs. It's not only about key vacancies. You will remember that some 5 years ago or so, Treasury gave departments a ceiling for compensation of employees and said they cannot breach that ceiling, meaning that when people were leaving because of natural attrition, posts were not being filled. That affected the Department of Home Affairs very, very negatively. It hit us very hard. such that we have got many vacancies, especially in the front offices. Some of the biggest complaints that are directed our way about long queues which are unable to manage is because of that. Our staff shortage in the front offices, the 412 of them, is absolutely out of this world. We are presently at 39% of what we need, which, as you can see, is extremely low. But we wrote a business proposal to the Treasury to show them how this thing is negatively affecting service delivery. And of course, in the last budget, Treasury tried, they gave us 266 million to fill these vacancies. But as you can see from where we study, in the civic services, it will only take us up to 42%, which is still very low. And we are still negotiating and in discussion with Treasury for further help in that area. Also on the key vacancies, you will realize that it also affected us on immigration officers on the ground who are supposed to be doing work of checking whether immigration laws are being obeyed, especially when it comes to illegal immigration. They also have been heavily depleted. We are trying to fill some of these posts. And lastly, the issue of anti-corruption. I'm sure you have seen the arrests that are being made by Home Affairs, the charges that people are going through. But the counter-corruption unit that is doing that marvelous job is also not adequately staffed. So with this little amount of money given, we are going to fill 12 posts from recruiting from law enforcement agencies to strengthen the counter-corruption unit. Because, Chairperson, ever since the operation which we conducted in Krugersdorp on the 24th of February, South Africans have opened their hearts. Every single day, they are giving us tips where to look for illegality, for people who are doing illegal things like photo swaps, fraudulent IDs. That's why you see so many arrests which are still going on, because people are tipping us. Some of them are members of parliament, and we appreciate that. I want to emphasize that we appreciate that. Our counter-corruption unit wouldn't have been able to make these successes if it was not that we are being tipped by whistleblowers, members of the public, members of parliament. It shows that the country is tired about corruption, and we appreciate that very much. Then the issue of COVID, number D, the impact of COVID on service delivery. The biggest impact we are having, Chairperson, is that during COVID, we could not provide certain services, as you know. We did report to Parliament as we were issuing a government gazette after the state of disaster was declared, showing which services have been stopped because of COVID. Now that you are aware we are out of the state of disaster, people are now coming from all corners of the country. People who could not get those services during the closure are now coming in large numbers, contributing to the long queues that we are seeing. So that is one of the biggest impact of HIV/AIDS on us. Apart from the fact that, as you know, we lost 500 million rands, which we were supposed to take to Treasury. Back to Treasury for the Department of Health to fight COVID. So it affected us by huge cuts on our budget, but it also affected us that we could not provide services. Now people are demanding those services, and they are coming in large numbers. So those are the issues I want to mention. Then the issues of Border Management Authority, as Commissioner Dr. Mashiru Pato will explain, you are aware that for the moment, the Border Management Authority is still a branch incubated in the Department of Home Affairs. They are hard at work to make it a standalone, I think it's a 3D government entity, by April next year. Certain steps need to be taken. You are aware that for now, as a branch in Home Affairs, we're able to appoint the present commissioner in November last year, Dr. Masia Pato. He was joined by the two deputy commissioners, which he has introduced, which are not on the platform, in December. From January, they started working very hard to make sure that the border management authority is implemented. On our side, Chair, in terms of the Act, you are aware that the Act avoided the border management authority going to have a board like in the SOEs, where there are boards, several boards, and people complain about boards because of the reasons that you can see, reasons of delivery. So instead, the Act provides for 9 ministers to be an interministerial committee that will be in charge of the border management authority. And the significance of that is that, as you know, IMCs, interministerial committees, are selected by the president at his own will. This is the only interministerial committee I know of in the state which is appointed by the Act itself, because the Act mentions which ministers must sit in this committee. It is the Minister of Home Affairs who is the chair, is the Minister of Finance, is the Minister of State Security, the Minister of Defense, the Minister of Police, the Minister of Health, the Minister of Transport, and the Minister of Environmental Affairs. I forgot the term about the oceans. Yeah, those are the ministers who sit. So in terms of the Act, there are a statutory body which must meet 4 times a year, per agreement. We've already met last year, and we met for the first time this year as the Border Management Authority to try and give direction to the way the borders in this country must be managed. Chairperson, let me give over to the DG to take you over to the APP step by step. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you so much, Chairperson. I will then move straight into the presentation. Muzi, if we can move to the first slide. If you can have it on a presentation mode. Thank you so much. So slide number 2, Chairperson, basically gives an outline of the presentation. Firstly, it's the purpose. And then we'll just remind the committee about the mission, vision, mandate, and values and outcomes of the department. And then we'll also indicate our contribution to the National Development Plan, which is 10 years old this year. And then we'll also share with the committee in terms of our contribution to the electoral mandate 2019 to 2024, what are the commitments? And then we'll also share the commitments in terms of the annual strategic plan 2022-23. This is something that has been innovated by the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation. And then what were the key considerations, Chairperson, for the 2022-23 APP? And then, of course, we'll start with a summary of the APP targets, starting with civics, immigration services, the BMA, and then administration. And then we'll then go into detail in terms of the targets per branch for the services that I've indicated, civics, immigration, the BMA, and then the administration. If we move to the next slide, it's just a continuation of the outline. The committee requested us to provide an overview of the budget 2022-23. To 24, and then we'll then look at the MTF allocation letter, and then a summary, and then breakdown per financial program, and then we'll then look at which is key for this committee, the provincial budget for the 2022-23 financial year, and then the committee also requested us to share with the committee the training budget for the financial year, and then the litigation budget, as the minister indicated, the COVID-19 budget as well. And then we'll then look at what the minister spoke about with regards to the capacitation of the department for both civics and immigration services, and then the interventions that we have to make as a result of the pandemic, and then upcoming legislation. And then, of course, as the chairperson has indicated, there will be an overview of the PMA, and this is a separate presentation. And at the end, we'll conclude with a recommendation. So if we move to slide number 5, Chairperson, the minister has already outlined the purpose of the previous presentation. This slide basically reminds the committee about the vision, the mission, the mandate and values and outcomes of the department. In terms of the mandate, just to remind the committee, Our services are divided into two broad categories, namely civic services and immigration services. First mandate is really the management of citizenship and civil registration. The second one looks at the management of international migration. And the last one looks at the management of refugee protection. And on your top left, it's really the mission, where we state that the Department of Home Affairs carries out its mission in line with its commitment to citizen empowerment and inclusivity, economic development, and national security. How do we do this? We do this through three things. One being an efficient and secure custodian of citizenship and civil registration. Secondly, we want to ensure that securely and strategically we manage international migration, and then the efficient management of asylum seekers and refugees, and then efficiently determining and safeguarding the official identity and status of persons. The values, I'm not going to repeat, they're stated below, being a people-centered caring, and of course, key is to ensure that we continue to have a department, as the minister was talking about, the new capacitation of counter-corruption. How do we then ensure that we have an ethical and also officials that have integrity, but also they must always be security conscious and development oriented. The outcomes are stated clearly there. I'm not going to repeat those. So if we can move to slide number six, Mosi. This is the contribution to the National Development Plan. The major focus of the NDP, just a reminder to the committee, is to confront the interlinked challenges of poverty, inequality, and employment by ensuring that the country achieves a higher growth rate. And as Home Affairs, we view that we have a critical contribution to make towards the attainment of the NDP objectives. And how do we do this? We are of the view that the inclusion of all citizens in democracy and development is enabled by providing them with a status and an identity that gives them access to rights and services. Further, we believe that this must be done in an efficient, effective, professional, and secure manner. Secondly, is the fact that we believe that a further priority for ourselves as this department is to facilitate the acquisition of critical skills that are required for economic growth of the country, as determined, of course, by our partner, the Department of Higher Education and Training, and as we grow our own timber. A third area is really to ensure that as the Home Affairs, we must continue to drive an integrated and coordinated border management, which is what the second presentation will speak about, to ensure that our borders are effectively protected, secured, and well managed. And then we also play a key role in enabling regional development as we work with SADC countries through DERCO to establish an efficient, secure, and managed migration. And then, of course, the last one is really how do we embrace technology as we build a capable and developmental state by ensuring that we move towards an enabling e-government, which will attract more investment into the country. So the next slide on seven basically speaks to two focus areas. First on your left is the APEX priorities. They are mainly two, economic transformation and job creation, and of course, social cohesion and safer communities. And if you were to look at the revised MTSF commitments that we have made, with regards to economic transformation and job creation, we have stated clearly, the Chairperson, that it's really the implementation of a revised visa regime through 95% of visa applications that are adjudicated within 4 weeks by 2022-23. And then with regards to social cohesion and safer communities, we speak about the establishment of the BMA by the year 2021-22, and then ensuring that the BMA is operational by 2023-24 at 18 ports of entry, six segments of the land border law enforcement area, and one community crossing point. And then thirdly is to ensure that the BMA is rolled out to an additional seven ports of entry and one additional segment of the land border law enforcement by 2024. And then the fourth area is really to ensure that 100% of selected ports of entry are equipped with a biometric functionality by March 2024. And then, of course, the work that we're currently doing around the automated biometric information system, or ABIS, that needs to be implemented by this financial year. Then the next slide then speaks to the National Annual Strategic Plan, where the intervention that we speak about speaks to ensuring that we have a secure border post through the phased operationalization of the BMA. And the indicator that we have, firstly, Chairperson, one is that we want to ensure that the BMA is fully established. I think the BMA commissioner will share more details around this specific area. And the target is really the incremental establishment of the BMA, including the submission of the pre-listing documents to National Treasury, and then the number of ports of entry with BMA rollout per year. And here we are talking about the rollout of at 46 ports of entry, including the incorporation of those frontline immigration, port health, agriculture, and access control into the BMA. And the last one, of course, is the number of land border law enforcement segments with the border guards. The commissioner spoke about the work that's underway by the deputy commissioners around ensuring that that work is being finalized. If we can move to the next slide. As we're preparing this APP, Chairperson, we had to take into consideration the following key considerations. Well, the first one is really the fact that the 2022-23 financial year covers the fourth year of the MTSF period. And of course, when we conducted the planning, we took that into consideration. But also we had to take into consideration, as I said, the NDP, the MTSF, and other government priorities and commitment, including, of course, the recent floods, the unrest that happened last year as well. And in response, Chairperson, to the COVID-19 pandemic, we then had to adopt as a department what we refer to as a scenario-based approach, mainly to civic services targets since the 2020-21 financial year. And once we did that, we have learned a lot through that scenario-based approach. This year in particular, we've discontinued that for this financial year. And we now have reverted back based on lessons that we've learned from the COVID-19 pandemic. We've realized that we also need to continue to provide services irrespective of what level of the pandemic we are in. So you'll recall, Chairperson, at the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, of course, this had a huge impact on the performance of the department, in particular its operations. It's also important that as we move forward, those lessons that I indicated that we've learned from the pandemic, we need to take them on board by making sure that, amongst others, we increase our investment in technology, including utilization of artificial intelligence, to ensure that we continue to provide services, in particular quality services. The second area is to ensure that we implement the revised DHA service delivery and operating models, as well as its access model strategy. And then we also need to ensure that we are ready for future pandemics. We need to look at scenarios studies by ensuring that we provide the necessary tools of trade to staff to ensure that we continue to provide services, and then of course to ensure the timely and accurate communication to clients on uninterrupted operations, and then of course the provision of continuous oversight and management of staff and resources, and then lastly, which is key, it's fit for purpose infrastructure to accommodate and also not only our clients but also staff in order to ensure that the secure service delivery. As I'm joining this meeting, I'm joining from a very small office in Stellenbosch, and you can hear the interruptions that I'm going through. So these are some of the things that we want to change. But further, I think the minister spoke at length about the capacitation through the business case that was submitted to Treasury, which will result in us being able to increase our staffing levels. Of course, it won't be at the desired levels. We hope that we'll continue those engagements with Treasury to move at least to a level that will be able to, we can say, is comfortable and we are at, that's adequate. Other developments that have happened, I think it's important to say that we've now received this discretionary grant of $3 million from SACITA to place about 50 interns that will really assist us. And then, of course, there's the ongoing work that we are doing with Treasury around the 10,000 youth employment opportunity for the digitization of records. As you are aware, we have more than 300 million records, which we believe we need to modernize so that we are able to improve efficiencies at our offices. Of course, we are cognizant to the increasing demands and expectation of the public to deliver quality services on a regular basis, in particular post the lifting of the national state of disaster. And of course, we are addressing matters that relate to the system downtime, and over a period of time working with other stakeholders, we believe that we should be able to deal with some of these challenges. If we can move to the next slide, Moses. So the APP then covers priorities that are informed by the MTSF, the cover priorities that have been shared by the Minister and the Deputy Minister, and the other departmental priorities. And of course, they take into consideration our contribution to the NDP, APEX priorities, as I've stated earlier, the MTSF-related commitments, the annual strategic plan commitments, our contribution to the economic recovery and reconstruction plan, the SONA commitments as outlined by the President. You'll recall that the 10,000 youth employment is one of those. And then, of course, the contribution to the National Strategic Plan on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide, and then our contribution to the District Development Model, and then the redevelopment of the 6 land ports of entry as a one-stop border post. And then, of course, critical, you have just set up a project office to assist us in the DHA repositioning program that looks at a number of pillars, including areas of policy and legislation. Further, they look at operational and organizational models, the modernization program, and how to build a capable and developmental department. And then, of course, on revenue generation, we are also looking at other streams where we believe as a department we might be able to generate revenue instead of just relying on the CISCAS, which is constrained at the moment. And then we're also looking at service delivery channels, which other ones can we add? And of course, purpose-built infrastructure. If you have been to some of our offices, Chairperson, you'll be familiar with some of the challenges that we face in terms of some of the offices that we have. So the next few slides then deal with the summary of the APP targets. The first one that we'll start with is civic services. The first at the top, we've committed to ensuring that there's 750,000 beds that are registered within 30 calendar days per year. The second one speaks to the 2.2 million smart cards IDs that need to be issued to citizens 16 years of age and above per year. And then 90% of machine-readable adult passports issued within 13 working days per year. And then 90% of machine-readable child passport issued within 18 working days per year as well. So that's the summary for civic services. The next one, in view of what the minister was talking about with regards to inspections and operations, we're increasing those inspections currently from 220 to 540 to make sure that we conduct this work in a very targeted approach with regards to specific sectors that we believe we need to focus on, in particular to ensure that there's compliance with immigration legislation. And then the second target is really to ensure that 85% of permanent residence applications per year are adjudicated within 8 months for applications that are collected within the RSA. And then the third one is really 90% of business and general work visas per year adjudicated within 8 weeks for applications that are processed within the Republic of South Africa. And lastly, it's 95% of critical skills per year. And this is done within a short period of time, within 4 weeks, in view of the fact that we believe this is a major contribution to the economy for those applications that are processed within the Republic of South Africa. Then the next one, I think the BMA commissioner will take the committee through this slide. Let me not waste the committee's time. We can move to the next one, which is really administration. Three key focus areas. The first one is on information systems to ensure that the biometric movement control system, or BMS, is implemented at 34 ports of entry And then we want to ensure that an enhanced e-visa system is released in production, and then the asylum seek and refugee system developed until life capture. And then, of course, the ABs that we shared, the intentions last year when we were still embarking on phase one. And then if you look at the DG's office, a number of bills that we need to finalize, amongst them, the DHA bill, we hope we'll be able to table this during this financial year in Parliament, and we're working hard to make sure that that happens. The second one is the National Identification and Registration Bill that needs to be submitted for approval to Cabinet for public consultation. Similarly, the chairperson will be familiar with the marriage bill that we worked on last year. We hope we'll be able to submit this bill to Cabinet for approval as well for public consultation. And then the one-stop proposed bill, which was also approved by Cabinet last year. So all these bills, we hope to finalize them during this financial year. And the last one speaks to ensuring that we enhance our communication interventions. And we hope to embark on 20 media engagement, outreach engagements, and 3 campaigns. From institutional planning and support, the team is working on the draft white paper on the management of citizenship, international migration, and refugee protection. We hope we should be able to submit this to Cabinet. I think this is quite crucial in terms of what the Minister was saying earlier on. And the second one is really the footprint development strategy approved by the Minister, which will then support the phased implementation of the revised service delivery model. And of course, the last one is really the approved strategic accommodation requirements, which we need to submit to the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure as part of implementing the DHA access model. If we move to counter corruption, and this focus area, yes, the branch has committed to 4 business process evaluations that will be conducted. And the focus is on evaluations that are done on late registration of birth or LRBs, ID applications, passport applications, and death registration. And then they also want to make sure that 66% chairperson of reported cases of fraud and corruption are finalized within 90 days. And it's important to indicate that there's been, in the last few months, there's been a very good working relationship between counter-corruption and also our HR colleagues to make sure that some of these cases are finalized timely. And then the branch is also committed to ensuring that the threat and risk assessments, or TRAs, are conducted in accordance with the requirements of the minimum information security standards, MIS, or the minimum physical security standards. And then, of course, the 400 vetting files that need to be finalized and referred to state security, SSA, for evaluation. And then on HR, chairperson, HR is committed to ensuring that the GHA gender-based violence and femicide plan is implemented as per the approved implementation plan. And they've also committed that all the misconduct cases will be conducted or concluded within 90 working days. So the next slide then basically deals with the target pay branch chairperson, starting with the civic services. If you look at the civic services area, chairperson, I've spoken about the number of births registered within 30 calendar days. There's the target for 2022-23, 750. And then the quota targets are listed below. For quota one, it's 145,953. For quota two, 206,661. For quota 3, 194,891, and then 202,495 for quota 4. So those are the targets with regards to the registration of births. With regards to the next one, which speaks to the number of smart ID cards issued to citizens 16 years of age and above, there's the annual target. We've increased 2 times from 2021-22. You'll recall, chairperson, the annual target was 1.6 million. We've ramped that up to 2.2 million. And we're of the view that incrementally, we should get back to the range of around 3 million, which is where we were before the COVID-19 pandemic. And if you could look at the breakdown in terms of the four quarters. For the first quarter, it's 572,000. Second quarter, 550,000. Third quarter, 546,000. And the last quarter, 572,000. The next slide then deals, Chairperson, with the passports. The commitment there is a percentage of machine-readable adult passports issued within 13 working days per year for applications collected and processed within the Republic of South Africa. And this speaks, Chairperson, from the date of receipt of application until passport is scanned at Office of Application. And the annual target for 2022-23 is 90%. And for the four quarters, we'll want to ensure that we perform at 90%. So if we move to the next one speaks to a percentage of machine-readable passports for children, similar with the earlier one, issued within 18 days on this one, per year for applications collected and processed within the Republic of South Africa. The annual target again is 90%, and throughout the quarters we'll want to perform at 90% to make sure that there's delivery in that area. So those are then the targets for civics. If we then move to the next slide, it's immigration services APP targets. As I indicated earlier on, in terms of the number of law enforcement operations, we believe that we'll be ramping all of them from 220 to 540 this financial year. And we've then broken down that 540 target to the quarters. For quarter one, we'll want to conduct at least 135 law enforcement operations or inspections to ensure that there's compliance with the immigration legislation. Quarter two, same. Quarter three, same. And quarter four, it's the same. So we want to ensure that there's consistency in that performance. One of the things that we've done, Chairperson, for the select committee in particular, if we move to the next slide, page 26, or slide number 26, this then gives, Chairperson, a breakdown of those operations that I referred to. The bulk of them will be conducted in partnership or as a collaboration between the province and the head office. Head office will conduct 240. At the top, Chairperson, it's the sectors that will be targeting. You'll note that there's farms, there's roadblocks, operations, there's transport or logistics companies, there's manufacturing, there's wholesalers, there's hospitality, there's mining, and there's construction. And then there's a breakdown in terms of what will be happening in each of the provinces. In the Eastern Cape, we hope to undertake 33 of these inspections, 5 focusing on farms, 13 on roadblocks, and then transport logistics 5, and then manufacturing less, hospitality 5, and then construction 5. And then in the Free State, same, 33. And you can see the incremental is on roadblocks, but also we're focusing on mining in particular because there's a lot of mining activities in that province. And then we're also looking at the transport logistics. If we can stay on that slide again, Moses, to make sure that I conclude. And then there's the breakdown for Gauteng. You will be able to note that the logistics company, given the fact that the majority of them are this side, including wholesalers, that's what we'll be targeting. Similarly with KZN, it's mainly roadblocks and then the logistics. And then if you look at Limpopo, there's more emphasis on farms as well. And then the breakdown for the Western Cape also includes farms, Northern Cape also includes farms, Northwest includes farms, and then similarly with Mpumalanga. So that then gives the Chairperson a view in terms of the operations that we are planning. The slide has been shared with the committee, so I'll then proceed to the next one. The next IMS target speaks to a percentage of permanent residence applications per year that are adjudicated, as we've said, within 8 months for applications that are collected within the Republic. The annual target is 85%. And now for quarter one, you won't have a target because there was no population in terms of the applications. However, it's important to indicate that those applications for permanent residence were reopened at the beginning of the year. So in terms of the cycle, we missed a particular cycle, but they will then be covered in quarter two, which is at 85%, and then quarter three, 85%, and quarter four, 85%. If we move to the next one, the next one then speaks to a percentage of business and general work visas per year adjudicated within 8 weeks. The annual target is 90%, and we want to keep the same percentage for all. We move to the next slide. The next slide, Moses speaks to critical skills visas. So these are adjudicated within 4 weeks, and the annual target sits at 95%, and we want to make sure that our performance speaks to 95% in quarter one, quarter two, quarter three, and quarter four. In terms of the BMA, I won't elaborate much because there's a presentation that you will be receiving with regards to this. Just to indicate at a high level, if you recall, Chairperson, last year when we came before this committee, Minister spoke about the need to appoint BMA commissioner, the deputy commissioners. We're done with that, continuing with the incubation of the branch until next year, the implementation of the protocols, both defense and SAPS. If you look at the target for establishment of the BMA through the submission of pre-listing documents to National Treasury, which means we're on track towards ensuring that the BMA is unleashed, no longer being incubated within the Department of Home Affairs. The next slide then speaks to the breakdown in terms of the targets for the BMA. For this quarter in particular, we will want to ensure that we finalize the appointment of Chief Director responsible for Border Control, Chief Director for National Targeting Center, Chief Director for Corporate Support, and of course the transfer of functions from Departments of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, including health, SAPS. The commissioner can speak at length about where we are with regards to that. And then we want to ensure that in quarter two, the BMA budget structure is submitted to Treasury. Quarter two, we'll want to make sure that all those governance structures, which are requirements for the pre-listing, are finalized. The Audit and Risk Management Committee, the Remuneration and Human Resource Committee. And then, of course, quarter four is the pre-listing documents, including BMA policies and procedures that need to be supported or submitted to National Treasury. The next one, if you can move to the next slide, Mozi speaks then to the number of ports of entry with BMA rollout. That's the annual target. BMA rolled out at 46 ports of entry by incorporating those services that we have indicated. And then the second one speaks to the number of land.
Chairperson?
Minister?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm very sorry for. May I propose that everything about BMA DG leads to the BMA Commission, because we are going to tend to repeat the issues on BMA. I'm just a proposal, because
yeah, sure.
I know the BMA Commissioner is still coming.
Yeah, no, Minister, we're in your hands, and I want to agree that we don't repeat information.
Please.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Minister. And then, which means we then move now to information systems. If we can move to that. The next slide, 39, speaks to the number of selected ports of entry with the biometric movement control system. And the annual target is 34. And there's a breakdown in terms of the targets. For quarter one, we want to ensure that there's a stabilization report for airport rollout, which must be signed off by the DG responsible for immigration to confirm the readiness of the environment for BMS implementation. And quarter two, more or less the same, but critical is to ensure that the network upgrades are completed. And then in quarter three, network upgrades for 19 ports of need to be completed. And then the BMS is implemented at 15 ports. Quarter four, It's the 19 ports. Then the next slide then gives the detail, Chairperson, of all those ports, starting with OR Tambo International, Cape Town International, Kinshasa, Lanseria, Bytebridge, Lipombo, Maseru, Fitzbeck, Oshuk, Kopfontein, Caledon Sports, and then you can see the others in the middle, Ramatlabama, Problems Breath, Epis Reef, Kolela, Mahamba, Skelpats Neck, San Roy's Gate, Mananga, Kosi Bay, Fields Drift, and then Emma Shatini, and then Telebridge, Devon Harbour, Cape Town Harbour, Crusher's Neck, Nakop, Swartkop Fontein, Neston, Stockport, Munanva Pass, Sunny Pass, Giriondo, Richards Bay. So that's where this will be rolled out to. I think it's also crucial for the select committee to know that. And then the next slide then speaks to slide number 41, Mosi, speaks to the enhancement of e-visa as a system as they approved a change request. And then, of course, the annual target really looks at how the system will look like in terms of its being released in production. And then there's the breakdown in terms of the various quarters. Quarter one, change request for e-visa system enhanced, approved by DDGMS. In quarter two, we want to make sure that that e-visa system that's enhanced is approved in terms of that change request, particularly looking at the vulnerability assessment, and then quarter three, testing of an enhanced e-visa system version, and then lastly, that's then released into production. And then the next one deals with two crucial areas, which is the implementation of an asylum seeker and refugee system. The annual system is to make sure that the system is developed into live capture. And the next one is the ABIS in operation. For this financial year in particular, we want to make sure that we move beyond phase one by making sure that ABIS phase two includes all those operational activities such as iris recognition, infant footprint, palm print, and the back end recognition. If we can move to the next slide, Mosi, the next slide then gives an indication on slide number 44. Or 43, just a breakdown in terms of the quarterly targets. For quarter one on the implementation of the asylum seeker and refugee system, that's what we want to do, functional design specification as approved by DDGIS. Quarter two, we want to look at the progress report that's submitted to EXCO in line with the development of the system. In quarter three, we want to ensure that that system is developed, and then quarter four, the system needs to be developed into live capture. ABIS, I think I've spoken to the annual target, but for quarter one, we want to ensure that the draft front-end and back-end business requirements in terms of gathering and specification is approved by DDGIS. And then in quarter two, the final front-end and back-end requirements. And then quarter three, we now look at the various modules. I spoke about iris recognition and so forth. And then quarter four, the functional testing and the acceptance of biometric modalities as approved by MS. CS stands for Civic Services, IMS stands for Immigration Services. Then the last one. On the next page, we'll now move to the institutional planning and support. The first area of focus for this financial year is really to look at the draft white paper on the management of citizenship, international migration, and refugee protection submitted to cabinet. And then the next slide that speaks to what are the activities that we will do per quarter. On page slide 46 for quarter one, we need to make sure that that green paper is gazetted for public consultation. Now, we are planning to have 9 virtual stakeholder workshops that will be held through the DHA stakeholder forum, which is quite active. And then in quarter two, we hope to have a national colloquium that will be held with government and NGOs to look at discussing the paper. And then we also hope that in the same quarter, we will then submit that draft paper to the minister for approval, and then we submit to the DPME so that we are able to get approval for the socioeconomic analysis impact report. In quarter three, we hope to ensure that the draft white paper is submitted to the various clusters, starting with the social, international, economic cluster and JCPS clusters, that will then consider the document and for approval and recommendation to cabinet. In quarter four, we'll hope to submit that for approval to cabinet. That's with regards to citizenship, international and refugee bill. And then on the IPS targets, the annual target on the phased implementation of the revised service delivery model, we want to make sure that the footprint development strategy is approved by the minister. Quarter one, we want to make sure that the revised service delivery norms and standards are in line with the service delivery strategy, and then that needs to be approved by the minister, and then the revised footprint and model office design in quarter two in support of the service delivery model as approved by the minister. And similarly, in quarter three, we want to make sure that the delivery service delivery charter that needs to support the service delivery model is approved by the minister. And then in quarter four, the footprint development strategy approved by the minister. If you can move to the next slide, in slide 48, the annual target looks at the approved strategic accommodation requirements for 2025-26 submitted to DPWNI as part of implementing the DHA access model. If we can move to the next slide. The next slide then basically speaks to what we will be doing per quarter. The first one, quarter one, it's really to make sure that the draft user asset management plan for 23-24 is submitted to National Treasury for infrastructure and budget determination. Quarter two, again, the final user asset management plan submitted to National Treasury and infrastructure for budget determination, and then in quarter three, the strategic accommodation requirements are submitted to EXCO for consideration and approval. And in the last quarter, we hope that that will be approved by the DG for finalization and also submission to the DPWNI in order to conduct a feasibility assessment for the user asset management plan. We can move to the next slide. And then from the DG's office, the targets that I indicated in the summary is really the this year, the DHA bill tabled in Parliament. For quarter one, we want to make sure that the DHA bill is gazetted for public comments. Quarter two, DHA bill submitted to JCPS and GCIT clusters for approval and recommendation to Cabinet. Quarter three, we want to make sure that that bill is submitted to Cabinet for approval, and then quarter four, the tabling of the bill in Parliament for processing. If we can move to the next one, it speaks to the National Identification and Registration Bill that needs to be submitted to Cabinet for approval and public, for public consultation. And there's the breakdown in terms of the quarterly targets. First quarter, draft bill submitted to EXCO for approval to recommend to Minister. Quarter two, draft National Identification and Registration Bill submitted to Minister for approval. And important is the CS report that needs to be submitted to DPME for approval. Quarter three, the draft Identification and Registration Bill submitted to those clusters, starting with GC, the Economic Cluster, and JCPS, for them to consider an approval before we submit in quarter four to Cabinet. Slide number 53 is the tabling of the marriage bill submitted to Cabinet for approval for public consultation. Quarter one, we want to make sure that the draft bill is submitted to EXCO for approval and recommended to Minister. Quarter two, we want to make sure that that bill is submitted to Minister for approval, and of course, crucial is the CS report. And then in quarter three, the draft marriage bill submitted to the GCIT, ECIT, and JCPS clusters for approval and recommendation. And then quarter four, the draft marriage bill submitted to cabinet for approval and publication for public consultation. Now, if you were to look at the next slide on 54, this speaks then to the OSBP bill submitted to cabinet for approval for public consultation. In quarter one, we want to make sure that that draft bill is submitted to EXCO for approval and then recommended to minister for consultation or for approval. Quarter two, that draft OSBP bill submitted to minister for approval. And then crucial again is the CS report. And then quarter three, the back to the clusters again, GC, the economic cluster, and JCPS for approval and recommendation to cabinet. And then in quarter four, it's the submission to cabinet. So that then concludes then the slides on IPS. The next ones really speak to, I think this is more communication. The target there for communication for this year is the DHA communication strategy plan. We want to ensure that there's 20 media engagements that I spoke about earlier on, 6 outreach engagements and 3 campaigns. For quarter one, 5 media engagements, 2 outreach and 1 campaign. And then quarter two, again, 5 media engagements. And I suppose as we can pick up from the public conversations, there's a need to do much more in terms of these focus areas, including in quarter three and quarter four. If we can move to the next slide, which speaks to HR, the HR targets, as we indicated at the beginning, this year in particular, the focus is on DHA gender-based violence and femicide plan that needs to be implemented. In quarter one, the plan is to ensure that that plan is implemented as per the approved implementation plan and will carry on throughout quarter two, quarter three, and quarter four to make sure that the plan is implemented throughout. If we can move to the next slide, then it speaks to the percentage of misconduct cases that need to be finalized within 90 working days. I think the committee will be familiar with the fact that we did not have this target in the previous financial year. This is a new performance indicator based on some of the challenges that we are facing, and we hope that it's important to lift this target from the operational plan to the annual performance plan. So the target is to ensure that this year we are targeting at least 60% of those cases, and for all the quarters, we'll make sure that we are consistent in terms of our performance, ensuring that we perform at 60%. If we can move to the next slide, then speaks to contract corruption and security services. The first one is to ensure that the number of DHA business processes are evaluated to identify possible vulnerabilities for fraud, corruption, and security breaches. I've listed them earlier. This year in particular, we're focusing on 4, and the 4 are listed in terms of the various quarters. For quarter one, we want to ensure that we evaluate the late registration of birth processes. Quarter two, we evaluate ID application processes, and quarter three, passport, and quarter four, just registration. So that's what counter-corruption wants to focus on. And then if you look at the percentage of reported cases on fraud and corruption finalized within 90 working days, the annual target, you can see, honorable members, we've moved that higher from 50% to 66%, and we'll want to make sure that we perform consistently above 66% for quarter one, quarter two, quarter three, quarter four, given the importance of this work. We can move to the next page, then speaks to the threat and risk assessments conducted. In the annual target in the APP, we've listed 80. A huge increase from 40 to 80, so we'll be performing 2x4, and we've broken that target into tranches of 20, 20, 20, 24, the 4 quarters. If we can move to the next target, it speaks to the number of vetting files submitted and referred to SSA for evaluation. The annual target is 400, and for each quarter, we'll submit 100. that then takes care of counter-corruption. So Chairperson, I'll now briefly speak to the budget allocation, the allocation letter, the summary, and then the allocation for the various programs, administration, civic services, immigration, institutional support and transfers. And the committee asked us in particular to look at provincial budgets, the training and litigation budget, COVID-19 budget. So that's what I'll try and look at. If you look at the slide in particular, Chairperson, slide number 65, the key focus column is to look at the first one. That's the allocation that we have been allocated by Treasury, 9.4 million. If you can highlight the 9.4, Mozi, 9.4 million, that's what we have been provided for. And the increases are mainly in the areas of...
Do you want to say billion?
Billion, yes, Minister. Billion.
Not million.
Yes, correct, Minister. So 9.4 billion for 2022-23. Of course, it goes down in the next financial year, 23-24. It goes down to 9.3 billion. And then it goes up again to 9.7 in the outer year, 2024-25. And I hope members of parliament are able to see areas of increment will include your border management authority. And I'll speak more to this slide later on in terms of how it moves up. And then, of course, the compensation of employees. But critical is what the minister referred to earlier on item number 3 around the capacitation of the DHA. So for this financial year, we get 266 million. And then next year, it moves to 278 million. And then it moves in the outer year to 291 million. And then if you look at, there are still reductions with regards to compensation of employees. And then you will note also the allocation for the electoral commission. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that, 2.2 billion. And then that increases, it remains more or less the same, except in the outer year 2024-25, it moves to 2.3 billion. And then crucial is the allocation for the procurement of the passenger name recognition system, 216 million, and then 225. But for this financial year, it's 216. This system, honorable members, assists us in terms of identifying or identification of passengers that will be boarding at various ports of entries around the world. So where you'll be able to pick up people that are visa-listed, people that are undesirable. And then there's the allocation for the represented political parties fund, 342, that's listed there. And then you can see the increment over the next few years. And then for IT, it's the Information System Modernization Program that still receives a large chunk, 669 million for this financial year. And then goods and services, more or less the same. And then, of course, the compensation of employees, because we are a department that's driven by human resources in particular. That's the allocation that's listed. So if we can move to the next slide, Mozi. So then that's the summary of the allocation in terms of the various programs, administration, civic services. And you can note, honorable members, from the year 2018, we're sitting at 9 billion. It moved up 2019 to 9.5 billion, and then a sharp drop, as the minister was indicating, in 2020, the COVID-19 year, to 8.4, and then it's now picking up 9.4, but then it's gone down again to from 9 billion 431 to 9 billion 405, and then I think I've spoken to the other slides in terms of where it picks up. Again, the compensation of employees quite crucial. So that then gives you a summary of the allocation per branch and also what's been allocated to administration, 2.6, and then civic affairs, 2.5, 1.4 billion for immigration services, IPS, 2.7. If we can move to the next slide, Muzi. The next slide then looks at administration. That's just the breakdown, Chairperson, of the budget. I'm not going to go into details. If you look mainly at the financial year allocation for 2022-23, the allocation for ministry, very small, management support, corporate services, and then the crucial area here on the slide is IT at 1.1 billion. And then office accommodation. I think, Chairperson, you're familiar with the fact that we are currently leasing a number of buildings. Public Works leases them on our behalf. That's what we pay. And we'll want to move away from that huge amount of money that we pay to where we have our own purpose-built offices. If we can move to the next slide, that's just in terms of administration. The next one speaks to civic services. That's the breakdown 2022-23 to 2.5. And they've split that between civic affairs management, state health services, identification services, and then service delivery to provinces, which takes a substantial amount of money, 2.2. If we can move to the next slide that speaks to immigration services, and the breakdown is 1.4 total, and the breakdown is for immigration affairs management, admission services, immigration services, and then asylum seeker. And of course, you'll see the payments that fall on the compensation of employees, again, the crucial area in terms of how we conduct our work. The next one, Muzi, institutional support and transfers. This is just for transfers. But what's crucial here, Chairperson, is to illustrate, if you look at the BMA budget since 2018, it was just a small budget of about 6 million, dropped in 2019 to 4.7. And the incremental we started seeing in the BMA was in the year 2020-21, moved to 19, and then 21-22, 46. And there's the budget for the BMA, Muzi, the one that you are highlighting, 196,717. Of course, it's these are costs for operations and the capacitation, including what we had been allocated previously, 120 million, which we requested. Treasury for capacitation from goods and services. And then the Electoral Commission, represented political parties fund, all those are transfers that we effect. We can move to the next slide, Mose. This is the provincial budget allocation as requested. Eastern Cape, 279 million, Free State, 158, Gauteng, 480 million, KZN, 280, Limpopo, 262, Mpumalanga, 181, Northwest, 176, Northern Cape, 123, 123, and the Western Cape, 221. So that translates to 2.1 billion in terms of the allocation to our provinces. And then the next slide speak to the provincial budget. The illustration is just an illustration for KZN, what's been allocated in terms of the various areas. You can look at the Amajuba district, the allocation, Ilembe, Sisonke, Ugu, Umkungu, Ndlovu, Umkhanyavute, up to Echegwini. So those are the allocations that have been effected. If you move to the next slide, Moses, the training budget, still small in comparison to what we want to do in terms of how we change the culture, in particular of our frontline staff, given the fact that we're receiving additional capacity. The first one is really looking at transversal learning programs that sit at about 1.5, and then leadership and management development programs around 3.3, and then mandatory training. This is training that people have to receive as part of the onboarding of staff, inspectorate skills program, the port of entry and civic services skills program, and then, of course, ICT training. These are areas we need to focus on, and then the total is 6.8%. If we can move to the next one. Litigation, the budget is quite small, about 33.3 million. If you look at the breakdown in terms of administration, DDG institutional planning and support, about 8.2, HR 1.1, that translates to about 9, citizen affairs about 2, and then immigration about 22. And that's an area where we're getting a lot of litigation, Chairperson. If we move to the next slide, that's the allocation in terms of the COVID-19 budget as requested. We've allocated for administration, which will include finance and supply chain. So what we've done, we've centralized the procurement in terms of those activities related to COVID-19. We've set aside 12.9 million, and then citizen affairs in terms of the work that's done in the provinces, 6 million, and then immigration affairs, 600,000. In total, that's about 19,689,000. If we can move to the next slide, as we're about to conclude. This slide, Chairperson, speaks to the breakdown in terms of the capacitation that the minister referred to. For the DMO, these are our district managers responsible for the various districts. It's an area that had not been funded previously, and we have now decided through the capacitation to make sure that at least 12 of those positions go to this crucial area in the Eastern Cape. We will be appointing Chairperson. These posts have been advertised. I think yesterday and today, they were shortlisting for these positions. Free State receives one because they currently have others. Where there's a small number of allocation is because currently that the province has already. Gauteng, 2, KZN receives 2, Limpopo receives 2, Mpumalanga does not receive because they are adequately capacitated at the moment. Northern Cape 1, Northwest 2, and the Western Cape, they are fine at the moment. One of the areas that we had not capacitated, Chairperson, was the local office managers. So this is like a principal of a school. We had not looked after all those offices. Now, as a result of the capacitation program, we have advertised 79 positions for local office managers at salary level 7, 10, and 12. So these have been advertised as well. And the breakdown in terms of provinces is stated there. Eastern Cape, 18, Free State, 2, Gauteng, 4, KZN, 24, because the bulk of their offices did not have office managers. We currently had only actual appointments. Limpopo, 12, Mpumalanga, 5, Northern Cape, 8, Northwest, 2, and the Western Cape, 4. And then senior supervisors, this is another area where we were lacking, 15, and then that's the breakdown in terms of the various provinces. Now, the minister indicated last year before this committee that we will be procuring an additional 10 mobile units, which are crucial in terms of taking services to most rural areas. So we are getting an additional 15 mobile office managers, and the breakdown is per the allocation, 3 for Eastern Cape, 1 for Free State, Gauteng 1, nothing for KZN, and Limpopo 1, Mpumalanga 3, Northern Cape 1, Northwest 1, and Western Cape 3. So where we have not made an allocation, it's because currently there is support, and then there's one for the back office, which we normally use as backup if there are challenges with the allocations. And then the chief admin clerks, 38, and the spread is indicated. But crucial is the admin clerk. These are your frontline staff sitting at 150. That's what we'll be recruiting. I think those adverts should be out by today or tomorrow or by Friday for all those positions. And then another crucial intervention is to make sure that we extend our footprint to hospitals. That's where we're doing a lot of birth registrations. So we'll be adding an additional 30. And then, of course, the other split is for control immigration officers and immigration officers These are immigration officers that report in the provinces to the provincial managers. So that then takes that number to 427. We can move to the next slide. And then this slide then speaks to the allocation in terms of immigration services. These are the number of offices with immigration services. Eastern Cape will be receiving. That's the number that's provided, 21 for immigration officers, chief immigration officers, 8. And then if you look at the first column speaks to what we've filled. The second column speaks to the total number of new posts that will be advertised. So the grand total, it's illustrated on your left, which is 207 in terms of those crucial positions for the Eastern Cape, for the Free State, for Gauteng, for KZN, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, Northwest, and the Western Cape. So the targeted areas here are immigration officers, chief immigration officer, and that will then give us that number that's listed there. Now, if you were to look at the COVID-19 interventions on the next page, what is it that we do in terms of the budget that we spoke about? We try and make sure that all officials are being screened when they enter or leave the building, and the building is sanitized on weekends to make sure that it's safe. And then we have a national steer corp, which is led by DDG HR. And then PPEs are also issued to officials regularly when there's a need. And then there's a SHEREPS that assist in screening in the reception where there's a high influx of officials. And then there are all those certificates that are available for disinfection. And then we had, I think, procured adequate PPE through property and facility management. So the next few slides, as we conclude, Chairperson, I think we only left with three more slides. They speak to the upcoming legislation, what the committee requested for. The first one speaks to the Home Affairs Framework Bill, which will give effect to the white paper on the repositioning of the Department of Home Affairs within the security cluster. Honorable members will recall that we were not part of this cluster, and we're now part of the security cluster. So this then provides for the competence of Home Affairs to provide for the establishment, functions, and organization, and its management of the Department of Home Affairs. And that will include your appointment and conditions of service. It will also include the establishment, powers, and functions of the enforcement and monitoring units. And of course, crucial is to provide for the establishment and functions of a Home Affairs college to make sure that we breed our own timber. Those are some of the activities that we have. If we can move to the next one. The next one is the marriage bill, which seeks to give effect to the white paper on marriages in South Africa. I think it not only responds to the court judgments that have found some elements of the current marriage legislation to be unconstitutional. We have aligned or we will be aligning, if you look at the policy, it's now aligned to make sure that it speaks to the principles of equality, non-discrimination, and human dignity as provided for in the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. And the white paper, if you recall, Chairperson, will allow South Africans and residents of all sexual orientations, religious and cultural persuasions to conclude legal unions in line with the constitutional principles. And then it further outlines some of the unions that are currently unions that are excluded, such as child marriages and those that are done in the absence of the other partner, not part. And then the one-stop border post is the next one. If you can move to slide number 81, Mosi. Slide 81 is the one-stop border post bill, which seeks to give effect to the approval of the policy on one-stop border post. And I think what's crucial here, Chairperson, is that this bill will seek to harmonize the movement of people and goods between the land ports of entry and its neighboring countries. And it basically gives effect to a decision that was adopted by Cabinet in 2018, but also it's part of our interventions in terms of ensuring that the African Continental Free Trade Area, the AFCTA agreement comes alive. Then the next one is the National Identification and Registration Bill, which will seek to give effect to the approved official identity management policy to replace the current Identification Act 1997. And then if we move to the next one, it's ready for us to recommend for the Select Committee on Security and Justice to support the DHA annual performance plan for 2022-23. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Can we get the BMA presentation?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and the committee members. Muzi, if you can please just also share the Border Management Authority presentation, and we'll be able to render it, I suppose, in probably 20 minutes or so, after we are able to have it on screen. Maybe as we are busy in the process of getting it on screen, one can just start by indicating that the purpose really of the brief will follow through on the basis of the request that has been received from the honorable members. If we move to slide number two, Muzi, reflecting on the presentation outline. So we'll put some bit of emphasis in the deliberation around the implementation framework of the Border Management Authority towards its operationalization. But we'll of course start by reflecting on the key APP targets as provided for in the current financial year. And then from there, we'll move into the key strategic milestones that has been achieved thus far in terms of this particular journey of getting BMA established. We will also touch a bit on the budget allocation, although not that much in detail. And then we will move into the key achievements as well as the matters that we are currently working on as reflected. So if we move then to the next slide, we will then start to look at the purpose, which I've indicated is already clear. If we can move to slide number four, where we basically do some bit of a recap on the BMA annual targets, as it were. The only thing that I want to indicate in slide number five is just to indicate that as we speak, members of the committee will note that all of the targets regarding BMA, none of them are relating to the core business of the Border Management Authority, meaning that in this current financial year of incubation, all of the targets that we are looking at are the targets that are driving us into the work that we have to be doing towards the establishment of the Border Management Authority. So that is one thing that the committee members need to note. That is why if you look at all of the five on screen, the first one is to make sure that at the end of the financial year, we would have successfully submitted the pre-listing document to the National Treasury with the view that arising from that, on the 1st of April 2023, we should be able to exit the incubation and be announced as a Schedule 3A public entity. That is the overall target we are working on. The second one, obviously, is in the current, is to be able to roll out the Border Management Authority in the 46 ports of entry. And of course, that is within the context of having incorporated all of those various functions that are being performed as we speak by various entities, as it were. And we will be able to give the committee members some bit of an update as to where we are, because our moving is more current and it's also, you know, working to achieve the target as it stands. If you look at the third, it's all about having it rolled out in the three segments of the land border law enforcement area. You will note that the past financial year we had five, and arising from that, we're able to do the rollout in those five, although still under a multi-agency context. But of course, in the current financial year, we have to be adding the three. Ultimately, we will be sitting with eight by the end of the financial year, calculating even those from the previous. And of course, the next other key area is, of course, the responsibility of facility management. As you'll remember, committee members, that all the facilities in the land border port of entry are to be moved from the Department of Public Works into the Border Management Authority. And the target we are looking at around 31 land ports of entry through which we should be able to start managing those facilities. And of course, the last one is the one around ensuring that the financial and contractual closure is reached in terms of the redevelopment of the six priority ports of entry. So that is, in a way, all of the targets as it were. But I think what is more key is to be able to then reflect in the subsequent slides in terms of where we are in dealing with all of these targets, but more doing it in a rolling context. It is on that basis, honorable members, that we kickstart this particular update with the next slide, which then gives the framework that we are basically using as we speak in terms of this particular process of getting BMA operationalized. I want the committee members to look at the bottom, I would say, quadrant from the right-hand side. You will note there that we have various work streams that have been created to be able to help us to actually facilitate the work in terms of making sure that the Border Management Authority is fully ready to be launched through by the 1st of April, as it were. So to that extent, we have those various subcommittees, as you can see them at the bottom end. But one thing that I need to say before I even try to reflect on those areas is to have this broader appreciation that the framework we are using is called NMOG, is the National Macro Organization of Government. It is actually a framework that has been established in government to be able to facilitate the establishment of this kind of entities, but it is also used when government departments are to be merged and otherwise. And this particular framework also, just to indicate, it has also been approved in a way by the members of Labour broadly within the context of the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council. And we were also able to go before them in the past month to engage with them on this particular process in order to make sure that Labour is part of this journey so that there's not any confusion. But what I want to just indicate, committee members at the bottom end there, you will realize that there are two key things that we are doing in this particular journey of establishing Border Management Authority. The first part of the journey is the capacitating of the Border Management Authority. And I will talk on that because the capacitating process, it is truly embedded on the financial allowance that we've been given by National Treasury to capacitate the Border Management Authority on the other side. As I said, I will also talk to that. But the second thing is the journey of integrating the existing functions as well as the people and the budget that are currently operational on the ground. So this particular NMOG process is more embedded in assisting us to achieve the work of the integration. That is why you will see there that we do have an NMOG work stream that deals with human resources, organizational development, labor, as well as change management. That is the area through which all of the respective departments that are affected in this particular journey are part of. And the key function they do there is the identification of the colleagues who are actually to be affected by this particular integration, as it were. So arising from that particular work, they also had to then escalate, you know, all of the numbers of the employees to be affected and be able to lead them into the second stream. The second stream is the finance work stream. And the key responsibility of the finance work stream is to be able to then bring in the financial in terms of the identified individuals. In this instance, they will be able to indicate that from this particular department, this is the number of individuals, this is the money that is going to be following those individuals in terms of the compensation of the individuals as well as the operational cost, as it were. The one that follows that is the one on legal. The legal work stream, honorable members, is one of the most critical ones because this is the work stream that identifies the front-end functions that are located in the various pieces of legislation in the various departments and entities that are affected in this instance, and be able to get those particular functions identified and ultimately be transferred from the relevant departments into the Border Management Authority through Section 97 of the Constitution that is to be done by the President. The one that follows that is the infrastructure. What is very critical in the infrastructure, as I've indicated, is all about the auditing of the infrastructure that effectively has to then be transferred from the respective departments into the Border Management Authority. And that effectively includes even the general tools of trade. The one that follows that is the work stream that deals with issues of information communications technology or ICT. In the key issue there, we have the chief information officers from the respective departments sitting. The key responsibility they do there, they identify the various ICT platforms or ICT systems that are being deployed in the port of entry, as it were. Their key responsibility is to have all of those systems identified, and the key objective is to get all of those systems integrated so that they start talking to each other, and we do have databases that are actually talking to each other so that we can start to have some efficiencies that we have to be deploying going forward. And of course, the last one is the one that deals with communication, particularly in making sure that the work that is being done is properly communicated and there is no any confusion in as far as that part is concerned. You will note, honorable members, that the Deputy Commissioner for Corporate Services, Madam Jane Tupana, is overseeing all of this particular work. But of course, above where she is sitting, there is what we call the Border Technical Committee, which is what the Minister spoke about earlier. But of course, he spoke about more the Interministerial Consultative Committee. But the BTC is effectively the meeting of all the DGs, as well as the commissioners responsible on this particular journey. I chair that meeting, and all of those DGs were able to make sure that this particular work is done accordingly and everything is followed according to the book. And of course, we report to the Interministerial Committee meeting that the Minister has spoken about. Maybe just to also reflect on practical coherence, on the 24th of this coming month, the IMCC will be sitting, and of course, the BTC will meet on the 15th. To make sure that all of the reports are ready to go to the ministers to be able to report on the progress in terms of this particular work. If we then move into the next part of the brief, we are then to start to reflect on the key milestones that we have on the table, which is on slide number 9. In this particular part, it is basically to indicate what are the key milestones that we are operating under. And the subsequent slide, I will be able to give the actual update in terms of where we are sitting based on those particular milestones. You will note, honorable members, that the development of these milestones has been fairly done by ourselves together with the National Treasury as well as the Department of Public Service and Administration. The key reason for that is because the work that we are doing has to fit into the broader government planning cycles as well as other activities that has to be taking place within government processes, as it were. And that is why it has to be done in this particular fashion. One thing to note that DG has spoken about is the fact that between 1st April 2023 until 31st of March 2023, which is this current year, and 23 in this bracket, we remain incubated within the Department of Home Affairs, as the DG has indicated, as a branch. But the most important thing is in the current quarter, which had started by April, ending in June, we have to make sure that we finalize Section 97 proclamation activities. And of course, we will be able to indicate as to where we are in as far as this particular journey is concerned. This particular exercise is the one that will facilitate the transfer of functions from those departments, which will then be able to facilitate the seconding of the individuals or of the colleagues into the Border Management Authority with the view that they will be ready to be able to come through on the 1st of April full time. The other issue in the current quarter, as it were, particularly in the current month, we have to be finalizing the filling of the critical position, which is one of the critical requirements, by the way, for us to be able to be announced as a Schedule 3A public entity. And those positions in this instance, I think the DG touched a bit on those, but among them is the national commanders, for example, of the border guards themselves, as well as those of the National Targeting Center, as well as the one who will then be responsible as a chief director for corporate services. So we have to make sure that all of those are done, and I will be able to give the update in the subsequent slide in terms of where we are in as far as that part is concerned. The other thing to be noted as a milestone is based on what D provides for, the fact that we have to be able now to start going to Treasury to start indicating as to the kind of budget that we will start be receiving from the respective departments in terms of this particular integration process. And I can confirm that on Thursday, which is supposed tomorrow, we will be sitting with National Treasury to start this particular journey. which then lead us into what E also provides for them, which is all about making sure that we are able to start indicating how much will we be getting from which department on the basis of the numbers at hand. And of course, on that basis, we are working towards October in making sure that at the medium-term budget policy statement, the Minister of Finance will be able to make sure that all of the issues are lined up in as far as that is concerned. The committees, as the DG indicated, are expected to be done by the towards the end of the third quarter, and that is very much critical. Otherwise, we will not be able to exit the incubation if those committees are not set. And of course, arising from that, we are able to indicate that next year, in the budget speech of the minister in February, there will then be that actual reflection as to the actual allocation into the Border Management Authority. That has to happen at that time before the 1st of April actually kicks in. And that is what the last bullet there indicates, that on the 1st of April, we will be able to be exited. Let's then move into the next subsequent slides to be able to reflect a bit on the budget before we then give the actual update as to where we are on the various issues. On this particular slide, the DG has spoken a bit on the 196 million that is currently being given to the Border Management Authority. So the purpose for my brief on this is to give the breakdown of that particular figure and also in terms of some of the critical issues. One thing that becomes a bit of a raising of the eyebrows is the 71 million that is put on the slide in terms of 2023, 2024, as well as the subsequent. The thing that we can confirm to the committee members is that those figures that are there are not necessarily the real figures on the basis that they are dependent on this particular process that I've just defined. Once we are able to have all of the figures on the table in terms of what we'll get from the respective departments, then Treasury will be able to ultimately reflect on the actual allocation inclusive of those particular monies that must be transferred from the respective departments. So what is on the slide for 2023, 2024, and the subsequent is not necessarily real figures. But what is the current in 196 is what we have in terms of this operationalization process. If we can then move to the next slide is where we are trying to get some bit of a breakdown as to what does that mean. So from where we are sitting, as I've indicated, the National Treasury was able in the current financial year to say, whilst you are still going to do the integration work in terms of all of this integration, but we can give you something on the sideline to be able to also do the capacitation. And that is what that 76 million there is about. And that is where the compensation of employees of the people that we are currently doing the recruitment on, particularly in order to make sure that we actually tick all the boxes to be able to be pronounced as a Schedule 3A public entity, is going to be highly dependent on the capacitation of what the 76 million is going to be able to do. But at the same time, we do have around 89 million in terms of running with a number of other things. And you'll see there that we have around 4 million that we have, which is purely just to assist us in the day-to-day operations as we speak. And you will be able to see some of the things that the amount which is on screen in terms of the operational cost is being used for. And from there, we also have the 18 million which has been allocated primarily around the border post infrastructure related issues. This one is highly linked to what the last APP reflection around the redevelopment of the six ports is all about. And this is about the money that we are using as we get experts to be able to help us with all of the activities around the impact assessments, as well as some of the technical work to prepare us to be able to do the redevelopment of the port, as it were. And of course, the bottom part is the 67 million, which is primarily talking about the issues of the additional allocation there that the department has been able to give to us, as it were. And of course, there are some of the assistance that we continue to get from the department as we are being incubated as we go forward. If we move into the next slide, committee members, you will then start to hear as we move towards the ultimate conclusion of the brief is the key achievements as well as where we are on some of the issues. I want to preface this particular slide here, committee members, by indicating that from the last time we briefed yourselves in a combined committee meeting that you had together with the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs in December, these are some of the latest that has actually unfolded since then. The first bullet there talks about something that the minister had already spoken about, which is about the you know, the employment of the commissioner. That one is fairly fine. We all know on that one. But the second part is what the minister also spoke about, the activation of the Interministerial Consultative Committee. I want to indicate to the committee members that the IMCC becomes the pillar in terms of this particular journey of establishing the BMA, primarily because when we have any stumbling blocks along the way, we use the IMCC to be able to engage, and ultimately ministers are able to unlock any of those challenges that we actually experience. But additional to that, the Border Technical Committee has also been activated, and it is also being used to make sure that we are able to move with speed in terms of the issues that we need to be doing. The third bullet there talks about the activation of the NMOG work streams. I just want to indicate that indeed we were able to activate all of the various NMOG work streams, and the colleagues are hard at work in making sure that all of the technical work, as I've described earlier, is done to make sure that when we actually able to move into the point of being announced at that point, all of those technical work could have been done. The issue of us being incubated in the department, it also involved a bit of a process, because that had to be approved by the Minister of DPSA together with the Minister of Home Affairs. And of course, we were able to achieve that, because when we briefed you at that particular time, we were not at that point. And that is why even the transitional structure of the Border Management Authority actually got approved at that time. That is why we are then able, as we speak now, to do the capacitation of BMA. Whilst we are operating with the transitional structure, we are also at the same time starting to do work to make sure that our permanent structure is actually being done, which will then what will kick in on the 1st of April next year. The issue of the compensation of employees ceiling, as I've indicated, got approved by National Treasury, and that was a milestone on its own. And some of these processes under normal circumstances are not easily done or are not easily done that quick, but we were able to get some of these things and, you know, getting through as it went. The next other biggest, I would say, pointer, as indicated by the minister, is the work that is underway to bring in 200 BMA border guards. I will talk about it in the next slide, so that I'm able to contextualize some of the issues in as far as that part is concerned. When we briefed you last time, committee members, we spoke about the issue of the logo, which had to be registered and protected and all of that. But now we can confirm that the logo is now official. The logo has now been approved, and it is now being used by the BMA, as it were. DTI and the minister thereof was able, Minister Patel, was able to assist us to make sure that the process is fast-tracked and we're able to move in that part. On the issue around the tools of trade, in this instance, being the 50-lane cruisers, for instance, at that time we indicated we procured them. But now we are indicating that work is underway to make sure that now they can actually start the process of branding them after the logo has just been approved, as it were. At the bottom part there, we also just give you some update that we are working on the website for the Border Management Authority, because communication is going to be very critical to make sure that people are able to follow through in the work that we do, even through the website, as it were, primarily because there are some who still push through some bit of fake news in the process, which is then very much problematic. And of course, at the bottom part there, we're just indicating that the issue of uniform procurement is already done, and we are now receiving batches as we speak from the service providers. I do know in the last meeting, you did guide us that we need to procure them from local manufacturers. And on that basis, we can confirm that indeed the procurements are from the local manufacturers, as it were. If we move into the next slide, which is slide number 15, this is the part which I suppose we just added it to make sure that as the NCOP-based committee, you will be interested to note that in the recruitment process of the border guards, you will note, honorable members, that we are intending to deploy the border guards in the various vulnerable segments of the borderline. And those vulnerable segments are already fairly, you know, known, as we've already spoken about them. For instance, us with Mozambique, ourselves with Lesotho, for instance. That is why we have to make sure that even as we do the actual recruitment, we go into those regions and be able to give people opportunities in those areas. So what you see on the slide there demonstrates what has just been happening in the past 2 weeks. And I can confirm that we have already done this work, and we've just concluded it on Friday. And even yesterday, we are now starting to take stock in terms of that particular work. What was happening in here We were doing the physical assessment of the border guards, 182 of them, which had to be selected through a physical assessment. We got assistance from correctional services, from the police services, from the municipalities. And as you can see, they were able to go to Polokwane, for example, to Musina, Mbombela, Mangaun, and Etekwini to do all of those. And that part of the work has been done. I will also indicate that we were able to do interviews for the 18 chief border guards as well as the senior border guards, which is fairly leadership. And in those ones, we had to be doing interviews, because we had to make sure that we assess their leadership capabilities and not just do physical assessment for them. And on that basis, all of that work has been done. And I can also confirm to the committee members, as requirement by Section 13(3) of the BMA Act, that everybody who is to be enrolled within BMA must be vetted. And to that extent, we're able to speak to the leadership of SSA. We then put together a special project team to be able to assist us with our colleagues from the Department of Home Affairs to do the vetting process. As we speak, that work is at advanced stages to make sure that we get now the vetting results, through which we will be able to get the colleagues very soon into the orientation process. And of course, that will then lead us into the partial launch of the BMA, which we are looking at doing sometimes in the middle of the calendar year. If we move into the next slide is starting to reflect on some of the matters which are currently being dealt with or that are fairly being addressed. In this instance, I can indicate primarily starting with bullet number 3, that we have been able, honorable members, to finalize the discussions with the Department of Home Affairs, the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. To that extent, we were able, in terms of Section 97 and the conclusion around the proclamation which the president needs to use to activate the transfer of functions, we're able to achieve that at the technical level and as well as at the ministerial level, meaning that we are done in as far as that particular department is concerned. We are just finalizing the activities in terms of the NMOG, as I've indicated, the identification of the people and all that. But the identification of the function is already done, and the ministers had already agreed or had already signed the concurrence. In terms of the work with the Department of Health, I can confirm that we already are done at the technical level. At the DG level, the DG has already concurred, and now the ministers are working together to finalize the signing of the concurrence letters. In that manner, we will be ready to be able to go to the president for the actual transfers. In terms of the SAPS, the work is also underway in terms of 1397. We are finalizing also at the technical level in terms of the Section 97 with the police. But in terms of forestry and fisheries, I can also confirm that at the technical level, the work has been finalized between myself and the DG of forestry, fisheries and the environment. And of course, the ministers are also doing their part. And very soon we will have those concurrent letters. At the same time, if you go to bullet number 4, honorable members, you will note that according to the BMA Act, we had to have three implementation protocols with the three, organs of state, the first one being BMA and South African Revenue Services. We have indicated when we briefed you in December that the one with SARS was already signed on in November, as it were. So today we are able to confirm to you, honorable members, that the one between ourselves as BMA and the SANDF has just been signed on this past Monday. So we did receive the signature or the signed implementation protocol, which was signed by the Chief of Defense as well as the Secretary of Defense. And on that basis, I will say we are done in as far as that particular implementation protocol. You will see there that we're saying we're still waiting, but this thing has just happened when we have already distributed the documents to yourself. That is why I'm giving you the latest. In terms of the one between ourselves and SAPS, I can also confirm that General Masemola has just signed yesterday the implementation protocol between ourselves and SAPS, but we haven't yet received the copy. They have indicated that they just need to brief the minister before we are able to move in as far as that part is concerned. The last part I just wanted to indicate is the issue around the transfer of the infrastructure in the land borders in particular from the Department of Public Works into the BMA. What we can confirm at this point, honorable members, is that the Minister of Public Works had already given us a temporary custodianship of the six ports, I would say at the four ports as we speak, And there are discussions around the other two that has been that are still having some technical issues that needs to still be finalized. And we are meeting with the colleagues during this week to make sure that most of these issues are finalized. Suffice to say that the actual work in terms of the transfer of the rest of the other infrastructure, that particular technical work, we are going to be kickstarting it as per the various parts of the APP, as it were, in as far as that part is concerned. We are going to use the State Asset Disposal Act, and arising from that, we'll be able to get those assets transferred. There is not any bottleneck that we have identified at the technical level in this instance. Everything is supposed to be going according to plan. And of course, if we move to slide number 17, we are just basically concluding to actually say that as the members of this committee, we do hope that you will continue to support this particular work that we are doing. It is a very sensitive work, as it were, very much complicated, especially when it comes to staff integration, because there are unions involved, and that is why we keep on making sure that we deal with unions in the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council. Thank you very much, Madam Chair, as well as the committee members and the minister. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Minister, and thank you very much for those elaborate presentations on both the Border Management Authority and the Department's state and budget. Honourable members, I'm going to hand over to yourselves to engage on this presentation. Honourable Minister.
Yeah. Just before you give over to members, I'm sorry, I just want to anticipate some of the questions which they may ask, because I also did ask as a member of parliament that what would like to know. The remember that the Border Management Authority is going to bring together some of the government departments that are already at the borders. It means the people working there are going to be transferred. This section 97 is about that. Now, the example I want to give you, there are police at the border, but they report to SARS, I mean to SAPS. They are members of South African Police Services under the Commissioner of Police. Now, they are going to have to make a choice if they want to be transferred. The choice is theirs, they won't be forced. And once they agree, the president will sign the proclamation. Proclamation 97, Section 97 in the Constitution allowed the president to do two things. Number one, to transfer certain parts of a legislation from one minister to the other. That means a legislation passed by Parliament and NCOP under one department. Certain functions of that can be transferred via Section 97 to be administered by a different minister. Number two, the president can transfer staff, a person hired in one particular department under a particular act, can then be transferred to the other. In this case, it will be the Border Management Authority. So because there are police at the borders, once this is signed between us, the police, they make a choice. If they want to come to Border Management Authority, then they get transferred. They fall under the commissioner of the BMA, no longer under the commissioner of police. If they choose not to, then they must be removed at the borders, be given over to SEPS, and the Border Management Authority will have a chance to get whoever must do that particular function. You are also aware that, for instance, for COVID-19, we have got Port Health employees under the Chief Director, Port Health, sorry, which also deal with environment, which you find at the airports and the ports of entry. Those are health people. They are the ones who decide whether you come in because you have got a COVID-19 certificate. During the time of Ebola, they are the ones who are active. They are also going to be transferred via Section 97 proclamation to now fall under the Border Management Authority. The policies they will be using will still be health policies, but their new commander who instruct them every day will be the new commissioner of the Border Management Authority. Now, this is the difference. There's a difference between that and SARS and the army. We're not going to take anybody from SARS. We just have got a protocol with them on how to work together. We won't take anybody from the army. The army will remain the army, protecting the country at the borders, but will have an implementation protocol with them, how they live side by side with the border guards while they are doing their work as soldiers. And the border guards are doing their work as securing to make sure that there's no illegal entry at the borders. That one is done by the protocols which the commissioner said have already been signed. I just thought it's important to clarify all these facts because they might be confusing. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much, Minister, for that clarity as well. Let me hand over then to yourself, Honourable Members, if you can give me an indication whether you want to engage with the presentation and or comment on it. If you can, by a show of hands. Okay. I see Honourable Seleku Mtetwa, Honourable Bartlett, Honourable Nkosi, Sister. Okay, that you've raised your hands. Perhaps let me start in that order, and if other honourable members raise, we'll continue. Honourable Seleku, if we could perhaps start with you.
Yeah. Good morning, Chair. Good morning to the Minister and to the DM in absentia, and to the DG and all the DDGs and the actings, and especially to my colleagues and the media there. Chair, thank you very much for the two presentations. Mine, I'll try not to have long questions, but mostly it will be questions of clarity, Chair. Firstly, Chair, one of to appreciate that one hears about suspensions. And also taking of what has been happening that in some departments, people get suspended and their cases are not attended to. So I would just like to note from the department that in terms of the senior personnel in HR that are currently on suspension, for how long do they think they are going to be suspended for before their cases actually, they are taken to the DC and their cases are handled? And how much is those three suspension actually costing the department for now? Chair, one other issue that seem not to die is the issue or is the war against long queues. It's an issue, you know, one don't want to politicize, and it's an issue that speaks to the most vulnerable, and it's an issue that really, really one will have to look at other ways or maybe at other alternatives and to try and mitigate this particular, you know, problem within the department. Because blaming and trying to, you know, shift the blame, it's not going to take me anywhere, because at the end of the day, we are members of parliament and we are here to make sure that we assist where we can. And one of the problems that I find that as I'm sitting here, that does not give me hope that we will eventually as a department, you know, defeat, you know, this war on shoes, is the fact that the budget for the department, you know, it keeps on decreasing, and, you know, and the percentages in terms of the frontline staff, you know, we don't meet the requirement. And I don't know how are we going to actually deal with this. And I would just like to hear from the department, you know, in terms of that, we know that it looks like we are not going to be able to get, you know, the expected amount of money to fill these positions, especially in the front lines. And what other alternatives is the department looking at, and so that in trying to mitigate this particular problem of not being understaffed. And as they choose, you know, we are out of COVID now, and the queues are going to be longer and longer, and there's going to be more frustrations, and that is not going to go well on the integrity and the image of the department. Chair, anti-corruption. We hear beautiful stories about so many cases have been reported, you know, so many people have been suspended, but I just want the department to give me a little bit of a practical example in terms of, you know, balance, try to balance the equation in terms of cases versus convictions. I think what South Africans want to see, Chair, is convictions. We are sick and tired of hearing that cases, but we don't move anywhere. People want to see action. People want to see cases that have been reported. You know, eventually they are going there in the, you know, orange overalls, and people are being convicted. That's what South African wants to see.
Sorry to interject, but can I ask you to try and get to your question sooner? Because I think there are quite a few members who want to ask. We're really running out of time. Okay. And I know it looks like all members want to ask questions. So I don't want to restrict the number of questions you ask, but just get to the point.
Elaborate why I'm asking these questions, Chair. It's very much important so that people understand what I'm trying to get at.
Okay, then I'll restrict the number of questions you can ask. Choose.
Oh, Gosiam, it's okay. I'm not going to fight with you today. It's okay.
Yeah.
Let us just go to the targets. The issue of IDs, pre-COVID, there has been a target of about 3,000 per annum. And now post-COVID, is the department looking at going to the initial of saying like issuing of about 3,000 IDs as per, before we went to COVID. And also to the law enforcement operations. And I would just like to know what successes has been there, because in the previous year it was 240 operations. Now it has been increased to 540. And I would also like to hear the difference between what PA, Patriotic Alliance, is doing and what Operation Dudula is doing in this regard. And what are the views of the department in that regard? And also the issuing of permanent residence applications, is there any foreseen challenges of impediments that the department foresee of them not achieving that particular target of 85%? And also, and the issue of the 10,000 unemployed youths, how far is that recruitment process? And are there any challenges or any, just an update? And also, Chair, in terms of the staff morale, what is the department looking at doing to make sure that, you know, they revive the staff morale? And I would leave at that, Chair, because we are in the Valela, but anyway, in Boskow.
Thanks, Honorable Selekwe. You know we are a team, and there are other members that also are going to be asking questions. Honorable Ntepa.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I'll be straight to my point. The first one, to the PMF and the Minister, I just want to know that what is the feeling of the staff around this matter in terms of these new changes? How are they taking it? And are there any that want to opt for a package? If yes, what could be the issues that are pushing them into that? And the morale as well of them, that now there'll be some changes on the PMF. How are they taking this? Because I want also share that maybe in one of our oversight to visit one of the areas, one of the border that is going to be part of their pilot, so that we see how these things happening, especially these changes. And the second one, Chair, which is my last question, is that the issue, Minister, I know you're working hard in trying to resolve this issue of queues in the Department of Home Affairs. It's still a problem. It's still a problem, but what we are finding sometimes is that there are people that goes there early in the morning around 4 o'clock, and they put boxes to get the queues. And when people comes in, it's either you pay money in order to get that front space and others. What is the problem of the department just to get rid of such things that is happening in the Department of Home Affairs? I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ntepa. Honorable Barton.
Yes, thank you very much, Chair. And I apologize for not switching on my video. If members accept it like that, Chair, I have a few questions to ask. And my first one, let me first say good morning to the minister and all the honorable members, and also to my colleagues and all the officials, and you also, Chair. My first question, Chair, is on slide 47. Regards to the revised service delivery model. Can the chairperson please, the minister, please give the committee more details on this model and its implementation, Chair. And then on slide 55, on the media engagements and outreach programs, what will be the focus of these engagements? How will provinces be prioritized and what mechanisms are in place to reach rural areas? And on slide 17 and 57, Chair, can you please provide more background and context in respect of the gender-based violence and femicide plan? And secondly, what does it entail and how is it being implemented? And thirdly, what content will the GBVF awareness sessions cover and how will this be rolled out in all the other provinces? And then on slide 71, Chairperson, what informs the allocations for the provincial budget? And my last question, Chair, on slide 77, it indicates that there are quite a number of posts that are still needs to be filled. How far is this process and what are the current challenges in filling these posts? Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bartlett. Honorable Nkosi.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Greetings to your good self, the minister and his entourage, my colleagues that are present in the meeting. Honorable Chair, I would like to ask some few questions with regards to the presentation made. We welcome the presentation made by the department. My first question, Chair, is on slide 17, fraud and corruption. I would like to know the main cases in relation to fraud and corruption and what measures are put in place to address that. On slide 19 onwards, dealing with civic services. Honorable Chair, I just want to check with the department, what measures has the department put in place to deal with the long queues? Already that question it's been asked by my former colleagues, Seleku and Honorable Mteto. But I think it's a question that we need to get an answer on it because it really frustrates our people. We just want to know because it cut across all the provinces, and we want to know as to what is the department doing in terms of addressing that. And Chair, I just want to check also, what is the department doing in making sure that they provide efficient and effective service delivery to service? What is the department doing in making sure that they provide efficient and effective services to our citizens on a provincial basis? And how far has the department gone in terms of addressing its IT and connectivities challenges that are experiencing? On the next slide, that is slide 13, on the border management, what, if any, are the current challenges with meeting the targets and what are the achievements in the rollout program? Lastly, Chair, on slide 16 and 39, makes reference to the biometric movement control systems. In the 2021-22 financial year, the department planned to roll out the BMCS, and in 24 points of entry, this target is
Honorable
Nkosi?
Honorable Nkosi, I'm not sure if this myself or can we all not hear
her? No, we can't hear you.
All of us.
Can I continue on her behalf, Chair?
No. Clearly, you've had your fair share. Arun Kosi, I think perhaps Zolani, if you could contact her, maybe we'll take other questions and then allow her to come in with a question towards the end. Let me then move on to Honorable Fitzer.
Good morning. Thank you, Honorable Chair, Minister, HRD's colleagues, everybody. I'm partly covered by my colleagues that did good questions. I just want to know, Honorable Minister, in terms of our northern border borders, from the Northern Cape right up to KZN, how many of those borders are still closed? Because I have received complaints, especially that some of these towns, the economy is quite down in those towns. Job opportunities and stuff like that has suffered because of those borders that's closed. The other thing that I want to know is I had a session now of getting people, South Africans from Zambia to South Africa. They had a very bad experience in the South African embassy with the Department of Home Affairs. I also picked that up from people before even the COVID period started with South Africans abroad that has to renew passports and stuff like that. And they wait for up to 3 years before they can get the passport or the relevant documents. So how is he going to address that, and how soon can we expect a turnaround on that? Okay.
Thank you very much, Honorable Professor. Honorable Matamar.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to ask three questions. One, I would like to know from the minister, I reported the case of corruption to him last year about somebody who bought an identity document from the Egypt with 100,000, and I was having a full information about that, and he instructed his people team to investigate that. Up until today, I've never ever get a report, and the person is still having that identity document. He bought from South Africa, from the department. And then I want to know from the minister also this year, I reported the Indians from Dubai. The company retrenched more than 200 South African, and now they have hosted within the place. And I reported the matter of those people who are there, they don't have a valid document, working permit to work in South Africa. Their passport have expired. They open their own hostel within the place. When they are going to arrest those people, or they are using Dudula to attack Mozambican and Zimbabwean. What about the Indians and the Chinese who are here in South Africa who don't have a valid document? I said there is places that I can go with them and say, yeah, there are a lot of Chinese who don't have a valid document. When are your people going to arrest those people? Or they are only arresting Zimbabwean and the Mozambique? Are those people that are soft targets? Why don't they arrest the relevant people who are the foreigners? Can he just elaborate on that? Because I move and make sure those people, they are having documents or not, they don't have a document. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Masamai. Honorable Ngozi, I think if you could just come in with your last question, and then Honorable Dodogo will come in after that. Honorable Ngozi.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think I was touched by the network. My last question was related to slide 16 and 39, Chair. Makes reference to the biometric movement control systems. In the 2021-2022 financial year, the department planned to roll out the biometric movement control systems in 24 ports of entry. This target has been increased to 34 ports of entry in the current financial year.
the department should update the committee if it successfully roll out the BMCS in 24 ports of entry in the previous financial year. And what were some of the challenges and lessons learned in the implementation of this system? I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Gadol.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I have a question, a request, and a comment. And I want to make those. Firstly, I want to really appreciate the two presentations on the department, as well as on the Border Management Authority. The presentations were very much comprehensive and enlightening, and thank you very much for that. Chair, the minister is oozing with confidence and he has a lot of energy, and that is seen in his own articulations and the work that he does on the ground, which is very, very much commendable. I wish we had all the similar ministers who do like Dr. Motsoaledi. I think many of the challenges and problems facing us in the country were going to be expeditiously dealt with. And thank you very much for that. Now, my request, Honorable Minister, is with regard to the Border Management Authority. I can see even in terms of the institutional arrangements that you're trying to put in place, the systems, the procedures, the plans, as well as the structures that you're putting in place, very, very complex, very, very dynamic, and they need a specific focus. My request is that keep it right there, because we do not want to experience any problems that will backtrack us, because finalizing the issue or dealing with the issues of our borders is very, very much important. It will help us in a great way to deal with the issue of illegal immigration in our country, something that you have taken by the horns, and we really appreciate that. This country, one of its main problems, it is in illegal immigration, and we've got to, in unison as a country, deal with this particular problem, because it has profound negative implications in terms of how we move in the country forward and how we resolve our problems. It is a problem that we need to confront, and thank you very much for doing that. Now, what I miss, and this is in a form of a question, Honorable Chair, is a practical and pragmatic way of dealing with long queues in our offices of Home Affairs. This is a very, very serious problem. Home Affairs is very strategic, as you outlined in the presentation. This is a civil and civic duty that government performs to its citizens, especially in our offices. But the problem is, and some of the members have raised that, is overcrowding in the offices of Home Affairs. What is good about offices internally is that they are digitized, state-of-the-art systems and technology, and the services are quite good in terms of efficiency, and you getting your ID quickly like in the past, you get your passport quickly like in the past, the birth certificate and all of that, which is very, very good. But the queues that are forming in the offices of Home Affairs, it is something that in my respective view, think that Home Affairs must attend very, very quickly and urgently. And the minister knows that I once raised this matter with him, and the DG, I once raised this matter with him, especially in the Matosana area, where this is really, really, really unacceptable. And I would like you, this financial year, to pay specific attention to that particular problem. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dodohu, and all honorable members for your interaction and the questions you asked. I think from my side, I'm pretty much covered, but I would just want to highlight and or raise a few questions. Minister, you'll note that the questions related to queuing outside Home Affairs offices is a question that cuts across. I think all members have tried to alluded to it. But I should also just indicate to yourself that as part of the plan of the Select Committee on Security and Justice, this is one area that we have also highlighted in terms of further engagement with yourself around the war on queues, focusing on each and every province as well as their specific problems. That's just a comment. But some of my questions have been covered, but I just have a few specific questions, Minister. I think with regard to the increase in the number of law enforcement operations or inspections, this is to ensure compliance with immigration. I think your target moves from increases by more than 100% because it moves from 240 in the previous financial year to 540 operations in the 2022-23 financial year. I mean, this is commendable, Minister, but I think it will also go a long way in locating and the tracing of undocumented foreign nationals within the country. But does the department have the necessary capacity to address this target, and what may be, if any, challenges that the department may encounter? Minister, in terms of the business processes that are to be evaluated, you identify four. These are to identify possible vulnerabilities, fraud, corruption, and security breaches. And I think in the current financial year, you identified four. However, in terms of your baseline, one business process has been evaluated. And perhaps if you could provide us with more information on that, what were the findings and what action has the department taken in that regard? With regard to the percentage of reported cases of fraud and corruption finalized within 90 days, I think honorable members have raised some of the concerns. However, your baseline is 50%, but your annual target is 66%. Perhaps the question is, why is the performance so low? And what are the challenges that the department is encountering to perform on this target? And how is the department going to ensure improved performance of 66%? With regard to your percentage of misconduct cases concluded within 90 days, while this is the new performance indicator, your target, once again, is 60%, which I would assume is also a bit low. And the reason being that we assume that this is an ongoing process which is being implemented in the department. I think with regard to the DMA presentation, Minister, you preempted some of my questions, and I think honorable members have covered other questions. I think the engagement with SAPS on the Section 97 proclamation, I think you covered some of those aspects and the fact that the signature is there, but you're still awaiting the report. But just in terms of, maybe just one question that hasn't been covered by honorable members is around the border post infrastructure, the redevelopment of the six ports of entry projects and self-housing. What will this entail, Minister, and what ports of entry? The six ports of entry, which are the six ports of entry that have been identified? I think those are just some of the questions and comments from my side. Minister, let me hand over to yourself. I see it's 12 o'clock. Let's see how far we get with the responses. I understand that I think two or three members of this committee are part of the ad hoc joint committee on the flood disaster and relief. And might have to leave this meeting exactly at 1. So let's just see, Minister, how far we get with the responses and then perhaps chart a way forward. Minister, over to yourself.
Yeah, I'll allow the DG to start first, and the officials, then I'll summarize everything that has been said. So DG, you and your officials and the Commissioner of the Border Management Authority, maybe you could start. then I will take with whatever is left. But the question to Honorable Mutsamai, I would like to touch it. And the question about long queues, I would also like to touch it so that they are able to answer the others. The question from Honorable Silegu, his question number 3, about anti-corruption, that people, South Africa wants to see conviction. I'll also touch it. Let me allow the others to be answered by the DG and the team. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you, person. And thanks, honorable members, for the questions. Maybe before I respond, I'll ask DDG HR to respond to some of the issues. This will include questions by Honorable Bartlett on the GBV in terms of issues around awareness, what we plan to roll out and cover. And then DDG can also speak to issues around the POS. And then DDG Mavuso, you can speak to issues around the service delivery models. And then I'll cover some of the issues around the PMA. And then Mr. Simons will respond to issues around permanent residents. I think Mr. Mabuse can also speak to issues around the BAPS, which is the booking system. And then let me then start by addressing the ones that we raised earlier. I think, Honorable Silegu, the issue around suspensions, we are handling this in terms of the appropriate provisions in terms of the public service management regulations. In certain instances where the employer moves too fast, you will often find that we will be found to be transgressing some of those activities. Now, in these specific cases that you have referred to, there were delays, but not caused by the employer. Without getting into the details of the cases, the delays were caused by employees that are affected because they did not want a specific chairperson presiding over a matter that the department had pursued. But that matter has since been resolved. The state attorney has appointed a new chairperson with regards to some of those cases. In terms of costs, the people that you have referred to have been suspended with pay. So that's what they would normally get in terms of the remuneration. And then you spoke about as well issues around long queues. I think maybe before the minister speaks to some of these issues, where we've made interventions, Chairperson, they are related mainly to how we've redesigned, for example, your workflow processes. And let's take an office such as the East London, where you used to have long queues outside. We've worked with the team within Home Affairs, known as the Moetapele team, that redesigned the workflow. And that office starts operating much earlier to address some of the people that are outside much earlier. And if you were to visit that office at any given time, we've really managed to deal with issues around long queues. Similarly, with the areas such as Port Elizabeth and the others. I think incrementally, there's work that we've put into place that's starting to give us dividends, including the introduction of an appointment system that has been rolled out to a number of offices. I think it includes about 24 of those offices. Mr. Mabuso will speak more to some of those issues. I think with regards to the 10,000 youth, the question that you also asked, there's ongoing work with the Treasury with regards to that matter. We currently are finalizing a revised business case, which we hope to submit to Treasury by tomorrow. And already the indicative figures before we move towards procurement. Honorable Bartlett, you asked questions in terms of the media, how we plan to reach those rural communities. We have a very strong stakeholder management forum in all the provinces. which comprises all levels of government. This will comprise national, provincial, and local government, including districts in certain areas. And in other areas, it will include NGOs that participate as part of our key stakeholders that we reach out to. And I think it's been working quite well. But in addition to that, we use community media to reach those communities, but also our mobile units. And as the minister requested us to do last year, we've increased them to about 110, and we will be procuring more of those mobiles so that we're even able to reach more rural communities. Mr. Sgama will respond to issues around how we allocate the budget for the provinces. And then on the BMCS, Honorable Ngosi, there were challenges in terms of the procurement, as you are aware, in terms of the supply chain management disruptions that happened as a result of COVID-19. There was an instance where we were not able to procure anything from outside our borders, and there was generally shortage of some activities such as your chip and other related activities. However, I'm happy to report that all the orders that we've placed for the BMS to be rolled out, we've now received the appropriate equipment for us to proceed with regards to that. And Mr. Matthews will then speak to issues around the inspectorate that Honorable Mthethwa has asked, but I need to indicate that some of the operations that we conduct with the SAPS, they are with SNDF around the borderlines. So gradually there's been an introduction of the partnership or the collaboration between the SNDF and some of our team members, in particular with regards to the border patrol. But the BMA commissioner will speak to issues around what is it that we're doing with regards to some of that, including the work that we're doing to deal with people outside our offices that are selling cues. I think DDG Muize will speak to some of those issues. Honorable Fesser, you asked a question around some of the borders. We have reopened Alexander Bay. And of course, that follows a process between ourselves and the neighboring countries. So this process in particular, the minister had to write through DERCO to the counterpart in Namibia to enable us to open that port of entry. Similarly, Hemsburg, that's been opened following discussions between Minister Mtswaledi and the minister in Botswana. So we have responded to some of those issues that we are referring to around communities that have been complaining about the economic activities. Of course, we need to make sure that as we open on the other side, that's opened there. As well. I think, Honorable Tetovu, we do take the issues that you have raised around how we need to move with speed, digitize, and make sure that people are serviced efficiently and quickly instead of long queues outside. I think let me pause here and allow the DDGs before the minister comes back. Let's starting with DDG Mavuso, DDG Sikama, and DDG HR, Mr. Simons. And then the commissioner for the PMA can conclude afterwards. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, DG. Thanks, Chairperson, for the opportunity. As DG has indicated, we are in the process of implementing the service delivery model in the current financial year as approved by the minister at the beginning. At the end of the previous financial year, obviously there are a number of areas that we are looking at, which in terms of improving our customer segmentation, our channels, also customer relationship, and also look at a number of key resources that are required for us to be able to respond to that. We are having a key partners that we are working with, also in terms of working together with other government departments. So there we are looking at a broad range of areas. It would be also good maybe if we can get an opportunity just to present the model to the committee so that it's understood. The second issue relates to the measures that we are putting in place around the long queues. As the minister has previously communicated, we have developed a system which is called the branch appointment booking system, where we've piloted it in certain offices. We're at the point now
where we are ready to roll out into all our offices. We've got a phased rollout starting with large offices, which will complete by the end of June, and then we'll go to medium offices and also small offices. The idea is that we need to enable clients to be able to book a slot, to be able to come to the office to be serviced at a particular time. What we are grappling with as part of the lessons we are learning from the pilot is that, first of all, I think the issue of change management and culture is taking a bit longer because people, in terms of embracing this particular technology, the uptake has not been as fast as expected. As of this week, since we started the pilot, the system has been used to do about 33,460 bookings, so which is still a bit lower than our expectation. But even though we have only piloted in just over 20 offices, so we are then wanting to increase as we move along into to ensure that people come in. And those who have used the system, they've actually got a very good experience because they when they arrive in the office, they go to the queue where all the people who have booked actually queue in. And also every day, the office manager gets a list of clients who are coming the following day who are booked for a particular service. One of the things that we had found, which we are still now working on, is that we are allowing booking for application for passport, the smart ID, also allowing for collections. But what we then realized that if we actually we have taken out collections because we find that another hour or all the slots in the morning or in the afternoon, you know, we find that it's only collections. So that affects the issuance of the new applications. So we have taken out the collections for now. We're just focusing on the applications, and then obviously our office managers are managing the issue relating to collections in a different way while we are rethinking the plans around that. But I think the issue of the booking will have a direct impact because the experience of the client is what is going to be changed, because when we talk about having what we call impact on the clients on the ground in terms of reducing the queues, that's precisely what the booking system will do. So that's the one area. Then there's a second issue, I think, that was raised by honorable members, the issue of passports that are taking long, particularly abroad. We have a pilot project that we are busy with, which we're going to be rolling out in the UK at the beginning of June, where we want to reduce the turnaround time in terms of the passports that are applied for abroad. Also yesterday we had a meeting with our High Commissioner to New Zealand, which was raising the same issue. So our approach is that if that pilot succeeds, we'll then obviously utilize that model to ensure that we reduce the turnaround times for those passports that are applied for abroad. Because the queries that we are getting are increasing because we've got a lot of experts now who are in Australia, in France, in London, and also in the US. So who needs the services? So we are trying our level best to ensure that this model that we are going to be implementing at the beginning of June, as part of the pilot, we will then be able to expand to other missions abroad. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson. I will then deal with the question around the budget allocation to provinces. My name is Thomas Figam. Indeed, all provinces report to the Branch Civic Services. And as part of the budget allocation, we normally use the baseline to check how their demand looks like, how they spend their budget throughout the year. But as we move throughout the financial year, we also then use the budget for the back office, which is the branch itself, civic services, to assist provinces that are now running short of money. So it basically is all about the baseline as a method preferred by the department. And we continue to make sure that we monitor it on a monthly basis to make sure that there's no over expenditure or under expenditure throughout the financial year. So the second question was around the target on smart ID cards, where it was 3 million before and now it was reduced. Honorable members will recall that we had an issue around COVID, the pandemic that was upon us, where certain services were reduced at that time. So we had to then go back and then review that. And we also have to work around a certain model wherein it allows us to implement the so-called scenario planning SDG alluded to the presentation before. However, we have now realized that now we are no longer within a disaster or the pandemic environment where the Disaster Management Act is now being lifted. So we have now
revised our target, and we had to make sure that we then ramp up whatever was created as part of the backlog before. So hence, we had to then look into the 1.6 million. This financial year, it is 2.4. And as the financial year progresses, definitely we will then go back to our 3 million target that was set before. The idea here is to make sure that we, with time, we then do away with green barcoded ID books, because those are documents that are prone for fraud and people are remove photos and so on and so on. But ideally, if once we stabilize our systems and all the challenges listed by DG in our presentation, then we'll have to make sure that we use Smart ID as the only identity for all those who are in need of documentation. So those are the questions that I thought I should cover, since Minister then said he would then deal with the long queue question. Thank you.
DG Chair.
Thank you. Thanks, DG, and good afternoon to the Chairperson, Honourable Members, and the Honourable Minister. My two questions, the first one relates to the filling of positions. In response to that is to say that we have a total of 187 posts that we need to fill, emanating from the allocation from Treasury based on the business case that is submitted, and out of those, thus far we have advertised already 321, which is in the process of being filled, and incrementally up until the end of May, we will be advertising the remainder of those posts. And I think one of the comments that the Honourable Member made was in relation to, are we having any problems in relation to filling those? And I think it's only, you know, fair to say that yes, capacity issues within the department in relation to the officials that must assist in facilitating the filling of those posts is a concern. However, we have come up with mechanisms that would improve that kind of capacity internally. We've looked at the HR practitioners within the branch human resource management and development that will provide that capacity. But we are also collaborating with institutions of higher learning and the sector education and training authorities, wherein we do have interns and work integrated learners that are part of the branch, you know, in supporting us to increase capacity to fill those posts. The second issue that I need to respond to is the whole issue around gender-based and femicide within the department in relation to what exactly is the department doing in response to this. And I would like to mention, DG, that and the chairperson that one of the key things that we needed to look into was the sexual harassment policy in the department. We needed to review that so that we can ensure that all manners of harassment are captured in that policy, and the manner in which they would be addressed are well articulated in that policy. But also to report that the policy has subsequently been improved. But just in terms of the implementation plan in relation to what we do is, we do have awareness sessions that we are conducting in the department. These are talking to both men and women, you know, as we believe that, you know, one of each would be a perpetrator and the other one would be a victim. So we are providing information as to what needs to be done should such an event happen. But we also have ensured that we have put mechanisms in place that would ensure that the reporting of such cases are not, you know, sort of discouraging future reporting should such incidents happen, but also to make sure that we address these matters as swiftly as we possibly can. But we are also working together with other external stakeholders, you know, to look at issues of LGBTIQA+, you know, how to deal with those matters in relation to GBV matters. The other matter that we're looking at is the psychosocial support, you know, that we provide to officials should they be, you know, cases of GBV and femicide be reported. But in terms of what we are communicating, we are also, you know, putting together in various offices communication material, for instance, that communicates the message that should a client be faced with such an incident whilst they've been served in the department, they need to know what kind of steps they need to be taking in as far as that is concerned. So DJ, I think in response, these are the two questions that have been raised to me that I needed to respond to. I think the last question was just a comment, DJ, that I think you made in relation to the 10,000. I think if there is any further questions, it could be addressed as such. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Matthews, and then Mr. Simons, before we take the PMA Commission.
Thank you very much, DG, and good afternoon to the Chair and Honourable Members and Minister and Senior Managers. Just with regards to the Inspectorate, which is the enforcement arm of the Department in terms of ensuring people in South Africa here on a lawful basis, we're currently been engaged in a lot of operations, currently supporting the BMA with borderline operations. And then the increase in the number of operations we've embarked on in this financial year has basically included us now ensuring that at least twice a month we have all our officials deployed on operations and inspections. So in the coming months, you'll see a significant increase in our activities because we've targeted at least a couple of Fridays each month where all officials will be out on the ground doing inspections, being involved in roadblocks. But in addition to that, we're also supporting a number of police operations and helping operations such as Ubai Malau. So there is a heavy emphasis on dealing with issues of illegal migration. I think there was a question regarding reporting cases of people being retrenched. We're now actively requesting tip-offs because whilst we're doing the targeted inspections that we've listed in the annual performance plans, we're also available to do inspections or to follow up on tip-offs that are received or information received to say there is illegal activity at such places. So that is also included in some of the targeted areas that we are focused on. Thanks, DG.
Thank you, Mr. Simons.
Thank you, DG. Yes, I hope I'm audible. I've had some connection problems here. Yes, thank you, DG. And I apologize if there's connection problems. I'm sitting in Hallmark and throughout the day I've had experiences with connection. But thank you, Honorable Chair. Good afternoon, Honorable Chair. Good afternoon, Honorable Members, Minister and DG. I will just want to reflect on the question relating to our achieving of our permanent resident application target. I want to inform Honorable Members that we have 11 categories of permanent residents. Our APP target speaks to three types of applications: achieve business, critical skills, and general work visas. So that constitutes normally about 20-30% of the work that we do. As Honorable Members would know as well, that since January this year, we opened up for applications for permanent residents. So we have received some applications thus far. So we are 5 months into the 8 month window period for achieving this target. So some of the measures we put in place, because we have started to adjudicate some of these applications, is we are in the process of interviewing 16 additional adjudicators. They will not only focus on permanent residents, but also temporary residents. The permanent resident APP target is our top priority. So we have allocated adjudicators to focus on those particular areas. Some of the other interventions we will be coming up with is a permanent residency committee that the DG has approved. And in the 1st of June, that committee will sit and adjudicate the new applications that came in from January with a particular emphasis on the APP target. So that's a focus. I chair that committee. And so part of the achieving of this target is really one of my big responsibilities. Other achievement or other interventions we came up with is on the level of assistant director, deputy director, director and assistant and chief director. That's where we are at the least capacity. And that's a critical area that we need to strengthen. And we have presented to our EXCO that we need to bring in some resources from our province to assist us with these verifications, mostly quality assurance, and that approval have been given so that we also strengthen the area we know is that we are struggling with the most. The one area that we also need to focus on, and this is very important, Honorable Members, Chair, is the verification of supporting documents. Because that is very important to allocate permanent residency status to an individual really is a very critical responsibility that we have as a department. And this APP target, the three categories of skills, business and general work directly contributes to improvement and growth in economic development for the country. So we're very focused on that target. So we have come up with procedures to strengthen our verification process, particularly the bank statement, et cetera, and with the new POPIA Act that comes in, there's certain protocols we have to follow, but those we have put in place. So just to ensure to answer to the Honorable Member that we are focused on achieving the permanent residency target. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
No, thanks, Mr. Simmons. Honorable Chair, I think I skipped DDG Moise, DDG responsible for conduct, corruption and security services before the Commissioner. If we can allow her to respond to some of those questions. DDG.
Thank you, DG. Good afternoon, Honorable Members, Minister and DG and colleagues. I think I've got two questions. What is the department doing to address the challenges identified and the issue of process evaluation, and what advice the 66% target for investigations? One thing I can say is that the department's anti-corruption strategy is organized around four pillars, namely prevention, detection, investigations, and resolution. Now, what advice is process evaluation would normally be our trend analysis. Our trend analysis will tell us that, for instance, IDs are high, passports are high, then we'll evaluate that process. And what we do is that we review and evaluate our processes regularly. For the past financial year, we evaluated the passport process because it was giving us serious challenges, and recommendations were made to close the loopholes that were identified in the passport process. So, and on the 66%, the capacity that we had necessitated us to say we'll do 66%, and 34% backlog is on our AOP target. However, because now, as the minister has announced that we will be capacitated, obviously this percent would go higher from the next year and next financial year. And what we're doing about the people that are selling shoes in our offices, we are working very closely with law enforcement agencies to ensure that we visit those places, and we try to ensure that we remove people that are on our shoes, selling shoes. Thank you, TG. I think that's all from my side.
Thank you. Over to you, Commissioner.
No, thank you very much, DG. And thanks to the chair. Just quickly, in terms of the question raised by Honorable Tetwa, in terms of the feeling of the staff members around the issue of the Border Management Authority and whether there are any people who might be thinking of taking the packages. The answer, Honorable Mteto, on this point is to indicate that... Sorry, DG?
No, the DG must just mute, that's all. He forgot to mute.
No, that's okay. Thanks, Minister. Thanks, Chair. I was just indicating that up to this point, we have not yet done the official engagement with the staff members in the various ports. And the reason why is because we are now still doing the staff work in the background. So that at the point of us starting to engage with the members, we do that in a very systematic and very structured manner. That is the reason why we went to the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council, where all unions sit, so that when we then move into this point of engaging with staff, we carry the unions by hand so that there is no any confusion in that particular journey. We have agreed that we will start this particular process at the beginning of the next quarter, as it were. However, well, what I can also just indicate for now is just to say that in terms of the engagement that we've been having informally with the staff members,
particularly when we go to the post to do operations as we've been doing. We haven't necessarily seen any negative or even pushback from the staff members, but instead, staff members are fairly excited on the ground with the establishment of the Border Management Authority. So that is what I can say in as far as that part is concerned, Honorable Mteta. But in terms of the issue raised by Honorable Mkosi, in terms of the challenges, what are the key challenges that we are facing in this particular journey of operationalizing BMA? I will say broadly, there is not any strategic, I will say, pushback that we have actually identified. We always engage at the ministerial level for any bottlenecks for them to assist us to unlock. However, one thing that is very real is that when the colleagues have to give out the functions and give out staff and also give out the budget, primarily because there has been issues around departmental budgets being cut, there is some bit of hard work that is happening in as far as that part is concerned. But of course, those are the technical work that we are doing. In instances where there are serious pushbacks, we are able to escalate to the ministers to be able to intervene in as far as that part is concerned. In terms of Honorable Visa's question, I can just indicate around the ports that are closed. I think Honorable Members will remember, in terms of the land border posts in particular, we have around 53 land border posts in the country. As we speak, we have 24 of those having been open, and we only have 29 that are still closed. Arising from the 24, you will remember we have 22 commercial ports in the country. I will say all the commercial ports are actually opened in the country except for one, with Swaziland. The rest of the others are actually opened, and everything is functioning accordingly. Just in terms of Namibia, as I asked specifically, there are 6 ports that we have with Namibia, and out of the 6, 3 are open and only 3 are closed. In that context, we had made sure that those that were opening, we are able to synchronize them in terms of distance so that the people will be able to use those that are open. We do acknowledge anyway that we are supposed to have all the borders open. Unfortunately, what we are basically working on now, you will remember because of COVID, now there is requirements that put port health colleagues in the front in a way that says nobody can enter the country unless they have to be assessed through the port health responsibilities in terms of law. So because of the capacity realities that we are dealing with, we are not able at this point to have all the ports opened because of that. But we are working on that on a daily basis, and we are hoping we will be able to get that completely addressed. In terms of the words of encouragement from Member Dodovu, we are very much happy with that. But lastly, in terms of the issues raised by yourself as the chair, just in terms of our interaction with the police, I just wanted to clarify that the signature I spoke about is not for the Section 97, it's for the implementation protocol, because the implementation protocol is done at my level and the level of the Commissioner of Police. That is the one that I said it has been signed by the Commissioner Masemola. And then he is just to brief the minister before he brings it through so that we can have it sealed. However, the Section 97 with the police, as the minister has indicated, is still underway that we are dealing with. In terms of the 6 ports that you had asked, in terms of the names that we are to redevelop, it is Bay Bridge with Zimbabwe, it is Lubombo with Mozambique, it is Maseru Bridge and Fixdek with Lesotho, it is Oshwuk with Swaziland, as well as Kofontein with Botswana. Those are the 6 top ports that has been identified for the redevelopment. They are the center of the economic activity in terms of them being the key commercial ports. That is why they are the ones that we are actually going to be addressing. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mkosi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much, Honorable Members, to your comments, words of encouragement and clarity. It really shows that all of you have got an interest in the normal running of the department. Not surprisingly, I usually say the whole government, socially, economically, and legally, cannot run smoothly without the Department of Home Affairs running smoothly. As such, Chairperson, all of you, or nearly all of you, mentioned the issue of the long queues. This was expected, and I did warn my official that every time I appear in Parliament, whether it is during a budget speech or not, this issue is going to be raised. It's one big issue that the department is faced with. You may remember in last year's budget speech, I even called it the original sin. And I said there's an original sin here about the manner in which IT services are provided. Chairperson, there are lots and lots of things that contribute to the long queues. Others have got very, short-term solutions, which are very easy. Others have got medium-term solutions, and some will have very long-term solutions, which are very complex, which sometimes do not reside inside the Department of Home Affairs, but reside outside it. So I'll try my best to try and shorten this. The first one is that Mr. Mavuso, the DDG for strategies and planning, has already mentioned the issue of bookings. This issue of bookings, we want to concentrate on it, because it then will mean that nobody will queue because you book and come at a particular time. And what in areas where it's working, it is definitely working very well. Because one of the biggest problems we are faced with is people waking up at 4 o'clock and believing that because they've woken up so early, when they arrive there, they'll be in front of everybody else, only to find other people already there. If the booking system works very well, then it will obviate the need of people buying space on the queues. These people are talking about, some of them are unfortunately homeless people who just sleep there and stay there and wait for the time to open in order to sell the queues and start this very huge corruption, which is very difficult to combat, even though, yes, Advocate Moise has already said they are trying, but it's very difficult. But if there's no need for anybody to buy a queue, it will help us very much. So that's the first thing that we are doing. The second issue, Chairperson, you may remember last month, all the 412 Home Affairs offices were down. It's the issue of downtime, where people have queued, even if they are not many, but for 3 hours or even more, the department can't work because the systems are down. And when other people arrive, they found that those who arrive at 4 a.m. or 6 a.m. have not yet even been served, because the systems are down, and sometimes they become down for the whole day. Last month when they were down, it was just one cable at CETA, which was damaged. The whole Home Affairs, 412 offices throughout the length and the breadth of the country is down. That is the biggest nightmare we are having, because as I'm saying, it is outside the control of the Department of Home Affairs, because it's another service provider in the form of CETA, who is doing that. So we are also looking into that, how actually to solve it. The other thing is that the whole infrastructure and architect in both CETA and Home Affairs. In this regard, we think we must start a process of getting IT engineers outside government. I'm saying so because we've already tried to call the structures inside government which are dealing with this issue. And we think it is time to move outside and get specialist IT engineers in other aspects of the whole country, even outside the state, to help us deal with this issue, because it looks like it's a very, very big problem. The other thing we are doing is we are looking at, very, very tiny. They were not developed for the type of work now they are required to do. And I said it many times that clinics and police stations are doing the same service as Home Affairs, but they are not hired from anybody. They are built custom made from the beginning.
There's no police station which is hired from a service provider or a clinic that is hired, but Home Affairs offices are hired. We've already submitted to the president that we'd like to build custom-made Home Affairs offices, where even if people have to queue, they've got some place to sit down. I'm sure part of the things that make you complain, some of them queue in front of shops, across other entities which are not even related to Home Affairs. It's a very ugly thing. It gives us sleepless nights, but we are trying to come with solutions for that. Then the other is this shortage of staff, which I've told you about. If our offices are filled to the tune of 39% only, there's no question that there will be long queues, because you have got fewer people serving yourselves. And I said, I'm speaking with the Minister of Finance, even the President, I've approached him on this matter of staffing, because the Minister of Finance has helped, but it's moving us from 39 to only 42%. And obviously that will not be adequate. It won't be able to serve us as such. Now, the rest of the issues, Chairperson, please allow me not to come up with them. They are the subjects of what I'll raise during the budget debate. I'm going to be outlining some of the steps in terms of short-term, medium, and long-term to try and deal with the issue of long queues. I was just telling you, those who you know are already in the public eye, those which you can see every day, which you have experienced every day, but rest assured that if there is one very big project that we are dealing with, to deal with long queues, it is this one. Even the issue of 10,000 unemployed youth, many of you might not be aware that it's related to long queues. As the DG has already said, we've got 300 million records in Home Affairs. That stretches from 1895. And all of them are manual. They are paper-based records. So if you want to change your sailing, for instance, or you want to change your ID number because there is a mistake on your date of birth, or you want anything you want to alter, which we call alterations, and we have got a special section on alterations, we must go back to check among the 300 million files, the manual files. We must go back to check the original in order to be able to change. Sometimes it takes us 3 months to 6 months with people coming back to Home Affairs many times. So some of the people who contribute to the long queues are people who have been coming for many times, not getting what they want. Now, if the records are digitized by these 10,000 young people, which will take us 2 years to 3 years, then you have got computerized records on your fingerprints. That person is saved here and there. It's never going to be told to come back. Where we'll say, yes, we have taken your note, come back after so many weeks, because we are still going to the archives to check your records. So it will help us also this issue. But as I said, the rest of the things, I'll mention them during the budget speech. The issue of anti-corruption, Honorable Selegu say they want to see people in conviction. We also want to see that, but remember, we don't convict anybody. They get convicted by the courts. What we do is to offer information to the courts. We are also itching, and we conduct our partners as in hawks all the time about some of these issues, because we also want to see convictions. But I must tell you, there were a lot of work is going on. It's not only conviction, it's also DC inside Home Affairs itself, which will have a particular outcome, that particular DC. Lots of them are going on now. I won't report them to you now, but we are about to report results. Some of them have been going on for the past 18 months. As you know, in terms of South African law, people even rush to the courts. There's a very important case where the DC is about to come to an end, but it had to go to the labor court 3 times with appeals and all that. So it's not that we're not producing any results. It's because it's a lengthy, lengthy process, because people know how to appeal. They know their rights. They bring in lawyers, and we've got to follow procedures which are very lengthy. Now, the issue of Honorable Mthethwa on the BMA, how people are feeling. I've been to the borders many times. I can assure you, people are not against the BMA. In fact, the commission, I'm sure she was just shy to inform you, that of the 200 posts that he has advertised, lots of people who have applied are actually from the other departments who are outside the BMA, who we thought are going to be transferred by the president via proclamation, via Section 97 of the Constitution. They are already applying on their own, wishing to join BMA. And when one is at the borders, you get lots of inquiries by people. The reason being that at the borders there, many of them feel isolated from their departments. And when they see the BMA coming nearer, they feel that their boss is going to be near them, and that's the one they would like to work with. So I've got no fear that some people might take packages and go. I don't think that's going to happen. The last issue is from Honorable Mutamai. Honorable Mutamai, I really pleading with you. It is true that you have kicked us about some of these things, but don't expect that there will be a megaphone diplomacy where we'll all the time shout about some of the things you kicked us for. Because we'll lose. People will know that something is happening and they'll hide information. But also we can't come out with excitement immediately without gathering all the information to get the conviction, as Honorable Selegu has said. And when you investigate to get conviction, you do it very silently and discreetly. You don't jump around and tell everybody that I've been cheated, I'm going there to investigate, because you'll startle everything. So please bear with us. And the last thing I want to mention in this regard, there is a wrong perception, and I don't blame it because that's what people are seeing. The wrong perception that we're only chasing illegal people who are from the African continent and from Europe and America and US, who are not doing so. Let me explain this phenomenon, Chairperson. It's very difficult for anybody from Europe or the East to enter the country illegally. Many of them do so, as you said, fraudulently, and we are arresting them. You've seen that. But let me tell you why you don't find many of them, especially from Europe. We have got the 2010 World Cup Legacy Project here. The 2010 World Cup Legacy Project has made us to establish an APP, Advanced Passenger Plan. Any plane that leaves any part of the world, including Europe and America, before that plane departs South Africa, they have to send to that structure, which is a 24-hour service. They have to send the list of all the passengers. And we check on that list anybody who is undesirable, who is not allowed to come to the country. And we stop them from there, even before they come to the borders, which our airports, our international airports, know are before they leave. Any plane that brings them by force, we charge them 15,000 rand per passenger, and we send them back and say, you can't enter South Africa. The airline that brought you must take you back. I don't know whether you did not watch. We were in court last week about somebody from Lusania who came by a chartered flight and came with a lot of people. She did not have documents, and we did not allow her in. Lots of lawyers were brought in. We took her passport. Last week, she went to court looking for a passport, and the court struck the case of the role. We're still keeping her inside South Africa. She wants to escape now. That is not a person from the African continent. And all the kingpins who have arrested from the East are not from the African continent. So I don't think people must believe the department is selective. Anybody who is doing something wrong, regardless of the color of their skin, we will arrest. Even South Africans who are arresting when they are found to be breaking some of these laws and helping some of this illegality. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Yeah, thank you very much, Minister, Commissioner, the DDG, and the team for all of your responses. I'll just allow honourable members, if you have one or two burning follow-up questions, if you wish to raise it, you may. Just note the time limits that we have. I don't see any hands, so I think that honourable members are covered. But then let me take this opportunity, Minister, to thank the department for your detailed presentation and to welcome your plans particularly for the presentation on the Water Management Authority, as this is a key area for oversight by the committee. We will continue our oversight over the BMA, and as Honorable Mthethwa has also raised, that once that the BMA has piloted itself to a large extent, then we would want to visit one of those pilot areas. Minister, I think it's important that our people receive efficient and effective service, deliver their home affairs officers, and we encourage the department to continue with your work on the war on queues. We await also, Minister, your budget speech where you will outline certain strategies. But I think it's important that we address the countrywide challenge of queues at home affairs. And as well as you raised the issue, members also raised the issue around the challenges of connectivity. And as I've also indicated to you, Minister, that in this year we expect to once again engage the department with regard to the war queues in the various provinces. I think it's important that the department ensures the implementation of targets that will address challenges in immigration services. And we believe that with the rollout of the Border Management Authority, this will also address some of the challenges with immigration. We wish the department well in the filling of the much needed vacancies in civic services, in immigration services, as well as indicated by the Minister, the Counter-Corruption Unit. These positions, we hope, will be filled as a matter of urgency for improved service delivery. I think we welcome the efforts towards the curbing of corruption by the department, and also which led to the arrest of officials. It is also prudent, I think, for the committee to also take this opportunity to wish the DDG, Mr. McKay, well in his retirement. I think we have had a few engagements with the DDG. I think this was a very fruitful and important engagement with the department and minister. I think it will also form the basis and lead to further oversight that we will do as a committee. And as you're aware, that we will be having a budget policy debate on home affairs in the NCOP, and some of these, the issues raised in this engagement would also be part of those debates. Let me thank you then, Minister, Commissioner, DG, and your team for your participation and attendance of this engagement. And let me also thank honorable members for your attendance of this meeting and engagement. Thank you very much all. I think this meeting is closed.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, honorable members. I'm sure we'll engage again during the budget debate. Thank you.
Thank you.